much about.
You gotta put it in perspective.
What, you don't like farts? Is that what it is? You gotta sit there and tell me farts aren't funny. Sir, look me in the eye and tell me farts aren't funny. Come on. Look me in the eye.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G. Ah!
Anyway, listen to the Rodney Show right here every Sunday, Monday morning. Come on, 12 midnight in L.A. But where are you streaming? You could be in Japan right now. You could be in London. If you're in London, I'll be in the morning, like around 8 o'clock in the morning or something. Anyway, hello to everybody in London and Tokyo. Anyway, I'll be back right after this.
I'd like to punch him in the face.
And now,
where can people go to get information and be, you know, turn the ignorance around? Can you get the EPA involved, maybe? Is it
our feature presentation?
Muggs does good work.
So does Rodney.
Agreed. Morning, everybody. Brand new Kevin and Bean Show. It is Tuesday morning, the 11th of Rocktober.
I feel like we have dropped the ball a little bit on Rocktober
right?
This year.
Can I just say, for people that don't witness Chip and Kevin...
Is that most people, you think?
Everyone,
it's
really...
everybody but Allie.
Everybody but me.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
They are so proud of themselves every morning that they remember it. That they high-five without looking at one another. It's ridiculous.
We're a team.
It's ridiculous.
Just because you can high-five with us.
You're right.
Because you have nobody to high-five with over there.
Shut up, you guys.
I mean, we could air high-five you, but
not
it's not
one.
The same.
Cool.
It's just
weird.
Funny to watch, is all I'm saying.
It's an awful lot of excitement for such a little thing.
Well, it's a little thing for most people.
All right, but I don't think we do nearly enough for October.
Okay.
I think we are, it's already the 11th. That means Halloween is 20 days away. I think we are way behind on Halloween Spooks airplay this year.
Agree.
I think we're fine on that.
I have not heard two eyeballs even one
once,
time.
Not once.
That's going to happen today.
Come on.
That is going to happen today, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just feel like we're letting the kids down.
Yeah.
What I'm saying.
I'm saying Halloween Spooks sounds great because everybody likes to love something and and it's that time of year.
Yeah.
And, hey, you should hear. And then when you listen to it, you go, that is just BS.
You hear it and your heart is filled.
Yep.
It's just
the girl's right.
And ghosts and woo gobbles.
The girl's right.
Yeah.
It's the
girl's not right. I don't think the girl's right.
I think the girl's right. And her name's Allie.
Okay.
Hey, we talked about this off the air, but I think it's time to have this conversation on the air because I am fascinated with how this works. This is a nightmare for Hawaiian Airlines. They are really, really having trouble implementing their new policy. They've got a problem in that they fly from Hawaii to American Samoa, to Pago Pago, or is it Pago Pago? Allie, do you know?
I do not.
Okay. So the problem is that there are small planes going from Hawaii to American Samoa, and a lot of Samoans are big. So they're having real difficulties with the planes being too heavy. Now, I have not heard in any of the stories I've seen on this, I have not heard that it is a safety issue. They say it is a fuel issue, that they're too much weight on the plane is costing them money because it takes more fuel, obviously, for a heavier load.
Sure.
So they are weighing people as they get on the plane.
No.
And it is not going over
well. So there's a scale right next to,
to
the ticket counter. All right, step up.
Are you serious?
I am serious.
And they have an announcer that goes, 179 pounds.
They've got people guessing.
She's gained 20.
See, they could make it fun. They could turn it into a game show. They could let the other passengers in the boarding area bet on it,
right?
What they think, like over under.
Like a carnival game or Plinko.
Oh, that would be so good.
Like how Kevin watches baseball. You know, if you bet on enough things, you can be very interested in the game.
Yes.
So anyway,
Chuck was the winner. Congratulations, Chuck, for you. We've got a $100 gift certificate to Cinnabon.
Oh, Chuck.
There is a new system planned to reallocate locations of passenger seatings based on the weight. So they found out that, as I said, they're burning too much fuel. So they're making some seats on the plane that they're either going to leave empty or reserve for children under the age of 13. Presumably that's because that's going to be, you know, under 100 pounds or something like that. So they got all these things they're trying to do with redistributing the weight. And help me understand this because I'm no scientist.
What?
If you put 100
oh,
people,
I'm listening.
If you put 100 people on the plane, don't they weigh the same as if you put 100 people on the plane and put them in different seats? If you distribute them the weight differently in the plane, does that make the plane
I think it makes it more balanced.
Yeah, you can't have all the fat people on one side because it'll be tippy.
It will be tippy, and that is an official aviation term.
And that burns more fuel because the plane has to spend more energy staying upright on that side?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
It's balance, yeah.
It's science.
Tippy.
Okay. As I mentioned, Samoans are very big people. There are a couple of people who were interviewed in the article who said Hawaiian is telling us it's a safety issue, which, by the way, I haven't seen. It's just been a fuel issue, what I've seen. But this passenger says he was told it was a safety issue as he was being
weighed. I think those smaller planes really do have to worry about the weight.
Yeah, absolutely.
As far as safety.
I would think so, too, because we've all seen movies and maybe some people in real life where they've taken bags off a plane because they say
Oh, I've been on planes where they have moved people and shifted bags. Absolutely.
I mean, I guess we want them to pay that close attention and pay attention to stuff like that.
Yeah, of course.
Hawaiian says it's a safety issue, but, you know, weight distribution. What, have we been flying unsafe all these years, he wants to know? He's complaining about that. I mean, how do they do this and not upset people, though, I guess is my question. If you're this business, what's the answer to not ask a woman, for instance, to step on a scale before she gets on a plane?
Well, I think the only thing you can do is make it private. You know, put it behind a sheet or something so everybody can't see.
Right.
And not have this guy. All right. Congratulations. You've lost a pound. You get to sit in the middle of the plane.
I think they're going to have to do the reserving certain seats and not selling them. They're going to have to lose some money. But until they figure out, oh, no, we're losing this much money, that's what they're going to have to do. Or get bigger planes.
Yeah, it's going to be a balance. By the way, the PS on this article, and then we'll move on with today's show, is this is not the first time that travelers have argued passenger weight prompted unfair treatment. In 2012, a New Orleans woman sued Southwest Airlines because she was refused a ticket after being told she was too fat to fly. The judge in that case dismissed the suit without prejudice, by the way. More recently, an Italian man sought damages from Emirates Airlines because, not because he was overweight, but because his seatmate was. Mm-hmm. He sued after sitting on a 9-hour flight from Cape Town to Dubai. He said his flight was ruined because he had to sit next to an overweight passenger.
There are times when a passenger spills into your side of the seat.
I don't love it, Kevin.
I don't love it either.
I don't love it.
Now,
I'm suing.
Is this a situation where you just go, well, you know, poor guy, I'm glad, you know, I feel bad for him.
That depends on how much spillage.
Yeah.
He's allowed to fly too, or is it the type of thing where you go, hey, I paid for my whole seat.
I deserve
my whole seat.
If it's infringing upon your seat to the point where you're like, hey, man, can I have $40? Because you're taking out $40.
I would love to hear that money.
Wouldn't you? Hey,
sir. Look, you're aware you're in my seat. So part of you.
You take out a tape measure. Right. By my measurements, this is $38.75.
Let's just settle it right here.
Just
give me some cash and we can both go to sleep.
Why is she a prospector?
She just got me a high five. What's happening?
I'm not sure. All right, let's talk about today's Kevin and Bean Show, shall we?
It's just words, folks. It's just words.
Oh, God.
Words spoken by John Cleese.
Yes.
But a different one.
A real one. The real one. Not just a real one, the real one. John Cleese is doing a show called John Cleese and Eric Idle together again for the very last time.
Wow.
So he's going to come on the program on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems like he's not aware of this yet.
Yeah, it's
because as soon as that comes through, he'll cancel it, but maybe they won't tell him, and he'll talk to us, and he won't realize it.
Awesome.
I hope you read the title of his show to him, too.
Did I say it wrong?
Yeah.
John Cleese and Eric Idle together again at last for the very last time.
First time. Right.
Where does it say first?
Together again at last for the very first time.
Oh, okay.
Not on our schedule.
Oh, interesting.
Way to go, Dave.
Dav, way to go.
Way to go.
comedian Sarah Tiana will be on the program talking about comedians with a cause benefit show at the Comedy Store. Did I say that right?
Yes. She's funny, by the way, and it's been a long time since this happened, but I believe she is only the second guest we've had on who's a celebrity who doesn't have a Wikipedia page.
That really bothers you, doesn't it?
It bothers me a great deal because how is it possible? Everybody has a Wikipedia page of any note.
I don't know. I've never really looked at Wikipedia close enough to know that everybody has a page.
No. Not even a little bit.
She must be actively not wanting a Wikipedia page. She must be deleting it as soon as somebody puts one up.
Yeah, I'm sure she's spending a lot of her time doing
that. Right. What is
she
hiding?
Like a Google alert on herself.
What is she hiding?
Calls her in the middle of the night. There's a page up. You've got to take it right down.
Something's up.
Something's up. Nothing's
Something's up. We're going to get to the bottom of this.
No, we are not.
There's nothing to get to the bottom of.
It's going to be so sad when his mic doesn't work when she's here.
That's right. Isn't that going to be a bummer? I don't know if you saw Supergirl last night, but Superman was on the program, and we have Tyler Hoechlin on the program today. Mm-hmm. We're excited about that. Matt Money Smith talks Dodgers. Bean makes his guess, and should you tell little kids that they're going to hell at Halloween time? The answer is yes, according to certain people. We will take a break and come back with the Showbiz Beatnik. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show. It is 5:54.
Green Day tickets on the show for you at the Palladium and also here at K-Rock in the Red Bull Sound Space. And more tickets for the front-of-the-line passes for Not Scary Farm coming up, too. Hey, Ralph Garman.
Spooky.
Very scary.
Wow. Yeah, scary, right?
How you doing?
Oh, great. And go now for me.
And go for you.
I just want to point out real quickly, Walter, you guys were talking about that airline thing with Hawaiian Airlines flying the Samoans around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kevin's solution to how you could make it so the passengers could get weighed.
Behind the sheet?
Was to put them behind the sheets.
Well, I'm saying separated from the peeps.
Mm-hmm. That's not what you said.
So everybody can see, put
a... Well, the only thing to do is put them behind a sheet. Do you think businesses really, when they're we're looking for privacy, are just hanging sheets randomly?
Just hanging around sheets.
They really? Could. Yeah, not a partition, not another room. You're thinking they should hang a sheet because
it would
times
work.
Are tough because they spend a lot of money on fuel. So
it would work. I'm good with that.
If someone could bring a sheet from home so we could hang it here in the airport and bring people, we'd really appreciate it.
If
thanks,
you're
everybody.
Afraid you might be a little overweight, bring your own sheet. I think that's the solution.
Oh, that's what you're saying.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I changed it now.
No, well, now it's better.
I think you meant literal sheet.
Right, and then a partition of some type so they have privacy.
Well, who wouldn't say partition then?
Someone who couldn't think of the word partition?
I just think put them behind a sheet. In case
it's science.
If you're drying your laundry, if you do laundry at the airport, and then just put people behind your fitted sheet.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
No, I don't want that.
I do, too. Hey, congratulations to all these celebrities who are doing great things. That's it. I'm out.
All right.
It'd be so easy if I just encapsulated everything that way every morning. For example, sorry, ladies, Ryan Lochte's off the market.
Wow.
Oh, no, that's too bad.
His Playboy Playmate girlfriend, Kayla Ray Reed, is wearing a big fat ring on her engagement finger. They showed it off on Instagram while enjoying a romantic kiss by the ocean. They have announced their betrothal. She is beautiful, by the way. And Ryan Lochte, of course, very successful athlete, so I'm sure they will be very dumb together. So.
He is so dumb.
She's no rocket scientist.
So they're perfect together?
I know it's hard to believe that a playmate may not be a Mensa member. And some are. But in Kayla's case.
But is it possible that he's more dumb? Because I feel like he probably is.
I think it's impossible to be less dumb.
Okay.
Possibly less to be less dumb. He's
so she's got to be smarter than him.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Obviously. Sorry to screw that up, you guys.
It's okay.
It's like
put her behind a sheet and see how dumb she is.
She has tremendous hate in her heart.
Right.
Oh.
Congratulations to Shia LaBeouf. Hollywood cannibal Shia LaBeouf got married. How about that?
Actual cannibal Shia LaBeouf.
That's right. Said I do to his girlfriend Mia Goth. Who you may remember from all those videos where the two of them are screaming and yelling and fighting with each other. They got married in Vegas.
That is one weird dude right there.
The actor wore a dark suit and sneakers. Bride wore a lace wedding dress, and an Elvis impersonator officiated the ceremony. Now, how do we know this isn't just more performance art from Shia? We don't, but apparently they're married. So that's
make your dreams come true!
Right?
Just do it!
Just do it.
Those you know, were his vows.
He's gotten so much press for the crazy lately that rarely do you hear people talk about his acting. Although I understand in this American Honey movie, he is outstanding. People are raving about his performance in this film.
Well,
so maybe he's still got some talent.
He's always been capable of being a great actor.
Yeah, he's always been a great actor.
No one's ever said he couldn't act.
Right, but the last couple of years, it seems like no one's talking about his acting. They're just talking about his stunts, you know?
Because there was a lot less of it. And a lot more.
He wasn't working
stunts.
All that much. Yeah. That's true. Congratulations to our friend Chris Hardwick. His show At Midnight has been renewed by Comedy Central for a fourth season. Renewal will keep the air on the show through 2017. So glad to see Chris finally working.
That is good news for him.
Yeah, finally he's got a job. Oh, wait a minute. He's on every TV show. He's got Talking Dead, of course, and Walking Dead, and talking about The Walking Dead, and talking about fearing The Walking Dead, and walking around fearing The Talking Dead. All of his shows on AMC. Today's celebrity birthdays, Michelle Trachtenberger, very lovely and talented actress, 31 years old today. How did we first meet Michelle Trachtenberger? Was she Buffy's sister? Was that her?
Yes,
we first
I think
met
so.
Her?
Yeah. I think that's the first thing I knew her from.
Actor Matt Bomer. You know him from White Collar. Missed that show.
Love
39
him.
Years old today. Emily Deschanel. Oh, Emily Deschanel. New girl. Who's that girl?
No, she's TV's Bones, isn't she?
Oh, that's her sister.
Zoe.
Yeah, Zoe Deschanel. She's Bones. She's TV's Bones.
Right.
She's 40 years old today. Constance Zimmer. How much do we love Constance Zimmer?
She's excellent.
She's on Unreal. Of course, was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a hot minute there. She's great. 46 years old. Jane Krakowski is 48. Luke Perry turns 50. John Cusack. Nope. Joan Cusack is 54 years old today. Steve Young, former NFL legend, now turned broadcaster, turns 55 years old. And Lenny James Morgan, speaking of The Walking Dead, 51 years old. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
6.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show. It is 6:21. Nope.
Yep.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. Got something else to do.
Do it.
Can't do it. Can't do that.
Halloween,
nope.
Halloween. Ghostly things are gonna
got something else to do here? Talking about something else? It is Halloween adjacent. But nope. So nope.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Nope.
Take it home.
I wish that the children could see,
hey.
But I can't find them for the life of me. And there's Halloween.
No!
Yeah, we do have something else to do, and this is Halloween adjacent, as we're only a couple of weeks away from the holiday. And every year about this time, you start to have the conversation about what it is you want to see in your little pumpkin or your bag or whatever that you're out trick-or-treating for. Your kids are, your friends are, whoever. And we all agree that if it's not candy, then we're going to burn this mother down, right?
Right. You don't
it's
get
be candy.
A pencil.
It can't be
nonsense
like floss.
Right.
Here's possibly the worst thing you've ever heard that somebody is handing out. And this is an organization called Answers in Genesis. And they are already not on board with Halloween. They already consider that Halloween has evil intent and it's a paganist holiday. And a lot of people have said this over the years, that it glorifies death and demons and ghosts.
Because most kids do dress up and worship Satan.
Yes,
that usually
right.
does
the
happen
one day
on Halloween.
They all come together to
what
do
the
it.
Hell?
So this organization is selling a Halloween kit where you can get a DVD with a sermon on there preaching the evils of Halloween.
I'm sorry, what?
A DVD with a sermon preaching the evils of Halloween, which any kid would be delighted to take
home. Did it come in the mail? Did it come in the mail?
Also, an anti-Halloween book. And dollar bills, really they're $1 million bills, they're fake dollar bills that have all sorts of warnings on them about what happens if you believe in Halloween. Now, Kevin, what are some of the things that we're supposed to hand out to our little kids when they come to the door?
They say if a kid comes to your door, it's a fake $1 million bill. On it, it says, have you ever lied, stolen, or used God's name in vain? The penalty for your crimes against God is death and eternal hell. They want you to give that to a little kid.
He just wanted an almond joy. That's all he was hoping for.
And don't try to hide either, because God knows your every thought and word and deed, and your conscience confirms that you're guilty.
Wow.
Hell.
This is kind of heavy for
right?
little kids just trick-or-treating.
They're saying hand this out to little kids. The headline is how to have the absolute worst house at Halloween.
Well, we may be jumping to conclusions based on the way this article is written. We thought we'd give them fair time on the air. From Answers in Genesis, spokesperson Lyle Crawford joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show on KROQ. Mr. Crawford, we very much appreciate you coming on with us today, sir.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
So what's the deal? What's Answers in Genesis all about?
What's the deal?
Yes.
The deal, my friend, is keeping children from going to hell and
right.
spending eternity in a lake of fire. That's the deal.
Right. But it's not a sin to walk up to your neighbor's house and have them hand out a Tootsie Roll. What's the downside of that? That's a win-win. It's fun for the parents who give out the candy. It's fun for the kids who get it.
Halloween is inherently evil. It is filled with evil intent, considerable paganism, and the glorification of death and demons.
Do you
think this sort of behavior is the kind of behavior that leads a child to ruin and will result in eternal damnation?
Do you think that a little girl that's just putting on a little princess outfit and walking house to house to get candy believes in Satan and is worshiping him?
There's only one royalty that I think children should worship, not princesses, but the King of Kings. Mm. That's who we should be dealing with.
Right, but I'm saying, aren't they just going house to house and getting candy, and you're saying that they're worshiping Satan?
They are participating in a celebration of evil and satanic demonism. And I don't think it's okay to say, ooh, they just show up dressed up in funny little costumes and give them some candy.
But that is
a child show up at the door as a ghost. The only ghost I concern myself with, sir, is the Holy Ghost.
Okay.
Right, but these little kids could be coming from good...
A child show up at the door as a zombie. Uh-huh. The only zombie I care about is Jesus Christ.
Oh, no.
Well, he did come back from the dead, right?
3 days later, was stumbling out of that cave.
Right.
The Walking Dead.
Okay, you won that round.
A little child shows up at my doorstep as a skeleton. The only bones I care about are the bones of Democrats.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Vampires? The only vampires, sir, that I care about are the liberals that suck the blood out of this country.
Oh, what just happened?
The only clowns I care about are the ones near the woods who are creepy as hell.
They're pretty cool, aren't they? I sort of like them.
Cowboys?
Uh-huh.
No, sir. No Brokeback Mountain for me, sir.
Hmm.
I don't want to see those two cowboys going off together. Perhaps you do.
Okay, is there an age under which maybe you don't give them this information? Like, say 5 or...
A little ninja come to the door?
Right.
Oh, how about all those jobs going to China? How about that, little ninja? How does that make you sleep at night?
I don't even follow the analogy there. I'm sorry, sir.
Witches? The only witch I concern myself with is the one running for president.
Oh, how?
Wow.
Pirates? I'm only worried about the butt pirates that are ruining marriage.
Superheroes, okay.
I don't care about superheroes. The only books of fantasy I concern myself with are the Bible.
I hate to say it, but will today be the final Los Angeles Dodgers game of the season? Let's hope not. We'll talk to Matt Money Smith coming up right after 7 o'clock to find out what they have to do to stay alive in the series against the Nationals. Also, Tyler Hoechlin from TV's Supergirl.
You going to be all right, Ralph?
So good last night. It was
so good
so amazingly good.
He is very Superman-y.
Yes.
Right?
Does Bean have to talk to him when he gets here?
No, comment.
I'm just saying. Can't take over? Can't we send Bean for some chocolate milk or something?
I'm fine with that.
I'm saying that's good casting is what I'm saying.
Yes, he's Superman-y.
Really fills up that suit, you know what I'm saying?
You guys want to do a little Bean Makes Us Guess?
Bean Makes Us Guess, yeah.
Ooh. Penis slapped.
Bean is a dick.
Pretty dope, man.
Just wanna tell ya.
I am the dumbest human that ever lived.
Now it's time for Bean Makes Us Guess.
Yes. All right, I thought this was a fascinating list, by the way, from a website. Ralph, you're probably familiar with this, called TVLine.com.
Yeah.
TVLine.com. They're legitimate.
TV Line.
Well, apparently 30 years ago this week, the Fox Television Network began broadcasting.
Ah, Fox.
Hard to imagine. There was a time where we had ABC, CBS, and NBC, and we did not have that fourth major network. But then Fox came into our life 30 years ago. And in honor of that, TVLine.com has compiled their list of the 30 greatest Fox TV shows of all time. The 30 greatest Fox television shows of all time. In case you're interested, they had they awarded it this way. 50% was quality in awards, 25% popularity and longevity, 25% influence and cultural impact. So it's kind of a list of big hits.
Oh, can I get those percentages again, please? I need to punch these into the computer.
I'm just saying that it's not just shows that have been on the longest or shows that have been the highest ratings. It's a combination of everything on this list.
12%.
So we are going to be trying to figure out, guys, the top 10 Fox shows. Let's see. We'll award.
So you want us to guess what does the Fox say?
Oh man.
You can phrase it that way.
All right.
Like.
Fair enough.
Greatest Fox TV shows in history. That is the game for Bean Makes Us Guess. Kevin, historically, you get to go first, and that is the case today. What is your guess, please?
The Simpsons.
Well, there was certainly no doubt that was going to be number one as the greatest Fox television show of all time. Kevin is on the board with a point. Well done, sir.
Then we have to go with the show that created and saved the network in terms of importance, Married with Children.
Number five on the list of the greatest Fox television shows of all time. Yes, you're right, Ralph. It went on in 1987 and lasted for, what, 10 or 11 seasons? Something like that, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
That is a point for you, Miss Ellen McKay.
If it's not on there.
Oh, you got to burn this place down?
It is number six, Allie. Congratulations. You.
You
are correct.
What letter is that? Her guess? She's going to be awful. She usually is.
You don't know.
It's Beverly Hills 90210. It's right. Number six on the list. Well done. Which was also on for 11 seasons, by the way. That's number six. All right. Three guesses, three hits. Well done, you guys. Kevin, you're up.
I am going to say X-Files.
Number three. Excellent,
thank
Kevin.
You.
Well done. All right, Ralph.
The Tracy Ullman Show.
The Tracy Ullman Show is not in their top 30, I'm sorry to say.
Simpsons doesn't exist without the Tracy Ullman Show.
Mm-hmm. You are correct. But I
know I'm correct, so then put it on the list.
I didn't make the list, but I guess as a standalone, they didn't think Tracy Ullman Show was significant.
Dumbass list.
Alan McKay.
24.
Number 7.
Oh, good.
Excellent
thank
guess.
You,
good.
Kevin. Thank
good.
You, Ralph.
Good.
That's good.
Okay.
Good, nice. Good.
Correct, Kevin.
Joe Millionaire. No! What? I'm going to burn this place down.
Oh, me too.
Yes.
No Joe Millionaire without other things.
That was an outstanding guess. But I'm sorry, no, not today.
It's too bad.
Not today.
How about their answer to Saturday Night Live, Mad TV?
Let me see. Mad TV is a no, Ralph Garba.
This is ridiculous.
But I'm telling you, when you hear the other ones that are on the list, I think you're going to see why not everything should be included. All right, Allie, what do you got?
Melrose Place.
Yes, Melrose Place is... Oh, I'm sorry, it's outside the top 10.
Oh.
Number 18 on the list. Melrose
Place. I think it's
awful.
Back then.
Number 18.
God damn it. Allie loves awful. That's why she's getting
these
awful shows.
That is true.
So far, by the way, we've picked number one, The Simpsons. We've picked number three, X-Files. Number five, Married with Children. Number six, Beverly Hills 90210. Number seven, 24. So we still got a few inside the top 10.
I'm going to say Arrested Development.
Number two.
Boom! Who has one,
gentlemen?
Two, and three?
How about Kevin today?
Chip and I.
Chip.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm telling you, this drill that they put in Kevin's head, you're absolutely right, Ralph. He has become a super thinker. What's going on?
Yeah, it's
right?
So funny. It's
I'm a
so
super
far
thinker.
Removed that I don't even consider Arrested Development a Fox show now.
Yeah.
Because so much time has gone by.
It has,
such a big deal
true.
About being on Netflix and everything. I almost forgot that it was on Fox.
Well, you don't have my mind.
That's true.
I know you wish you did.
All right, Ralph Garman, you're up.
NFL football.
Oh.
No.
That's
okay.
That's right.
Is that a Fox show?
Ralph should leave.
All right, Ralph.
Is that a Fox show?
Fox had NFL for a long, long time. Still does.
Yeah, it's a live sporting event.
Right.
Though. That's not a Fox TV show.
What?
That's the network that's carrying a live sporting event. Well, for whatever reason. I don't have to defend. It's just not on the list.
All right.
Alan McKay.
Family Guy.
Family Guy would be in my top five, by the way. Number 14 on that
list.
Come
on!
I was very surprised and disappointed. All right,
since Ralph is gone.
Shall we just wrap it up?
Yeah.
Well, let's do it. Let me get one more guess in, because I'm pretty sure I have another one.
Okay.
Cops.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cops is on the list at number 16. Number 16. I didn't realize, by the way, that they're not making any more new Cops. Did you guys know that?
I
they still run
paid
the reruns.
Attention.
Yeah, I haven't checked my Google alerts.
They stopped making the show in 2013. It had been on since 1989, but they do still run the reruns. Alan McKay, you want to take one more guess?
No.
Okay. Here's what else was in the top 10. Number one, Kevin, you had The Simpsons. Number two, Arrested Development. Number three, The X-Files. Here's one I'm surprised nobody came up with at number four, a show that was on for 14 years
Arsenio
on the Fox
Hall.
Network. No, I'm sorry. No. Called American Idol, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh.
American Idol at number four. Number five was Married with Children. Six, Beverly Hills 90210. Number seven, 24. Number eight, Ally McBeal.
Oh!
Totally forgot about that show.
Me too.
Number nine, King of the Hill.
And Family Guy's not on
and
the top ten?
Right, that's
and
ridiculous.
And number ten is House, according to their list, the greatest Fox TV shows of all time. By the way, I'm surprised nobody guessed The O.C., which came in at number 13.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody guessed That 70s Show, which was on forever, that came in at number 20.
Your list is dumb.
Grounded for Life.
Is my
Titus.
List is my list really done, Kevin, considering that you won the game?
Yes, I think that's the proof.
This has been B-Mix's Guess.
B-Mix's Guess, yeah.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're listening to The Kevin and Bean Show at 6:54.
Before Group Love right there, we played the new one from Green Day called Bang Bang. And don't forget, if you want to see Green Day here at the Red Bull Sound Space at K-Rock, we got that for you. And tickets for them at the Hollywood Palladium. You can win those next hour. In fact, within the next 20 minutes or so, right here on the Kevin and Bean Show. That's a good deal. Two different Green Day events for you.
Yeah.
Just that is a good deal. That's coming up in about 20 minutes or so. Rob is here now. Time for the Showbiz Beat on a Tuesday. What's going on?
Well, lots of things are going on. For example, Death Cab for Cutie. Just dropped a new song yesterday called Million Dollar Loan. It is a Donald Trump protest song from Death Cab. And it's about Trump's statement early on in his presidential campaign that his father only gave him $1 million to start his business.
That's all?
That's all he got. And he's a self-made man other than that first initial $1 million that was given to him. You know how that goes. So Ben Gibbard said, not only has the statement been proven to be wildly untrue, apparently he got a lot more money than just the million. Yeah, but he was so flippant about it, it truly disgusted me. And so Ben was motivated to write a new song. Here it is, new music from Death Cab for Cutie. It's called Million Dollar Loan.
Million Dollar Loan. Nobody makes it on their own without a million dollar loan. To cast the first stone, you need a million dollar loan. Every ascension to a throne starts with a million dollar loan.
Even when he's angry, Ben's like, hey, I'm really upset with this
Death
guy.
Death Cab, not really a good protest band, I don't think.
Yeah, they're really not.
How about some brand new Death Club for Cutie?
Death Club.
Death Club is better, yeah.
Yeah. Daniel Craig may return as James Bond. How about that?
Wow.
Last time we all talked about it, this was after he was finished with the press on Spectre, his most recent 007 film, and he said pretty definitively that he was done. At least that's what I took from this statement. I'd rather break this glass and slash my wrists than do another film, he said regarding the role. Well, maybe with the passage of time, things have gotten softer. Now, he was talked to at the New York Film Festival, and it's kind of vague as to whether he was talking about Bond or about movie making in general. But he said, as far as I'm concerned, I've got the best job in the world. I'll keep doing it as long as I get a kick out of it. If I were to stop doing it, I would miss it terribly. So producers are encouraged and are actively trying to lock him down for the next James Bond film. So it could happen. Apparently he's feeling softer about his movie work these days. I guess after you make one of those films, especially a Bond film, which is very physically taxing, you're probably tired and exhausted and you don't want to think about doing another one. And then after you, get the check.
Yeah,
maybe I will do another one. That sounds like a good idea. Speaking of movies, Michelle Williams apparently is in talks to star as Janis Joplin in a biopic about the legendary singer.
That's good casting, I think.
Really?
Huh. I do.
Do you?
She amazes me with her acting ability. You think she's a little soft for Janis?
For Janis? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd put
someone better.
Someone else.
Really? That person?
You guys are going that far, huh?
I have a great deal of.
You put Lady Gaga.
There you go.
Lady Gaga would be a great choice.
I'd put Lindsay Lohan before I'd put Michelle Williams.
You
yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, she's definitely got a Janis vibe to her.
Yep.
Michelle Williams, I don't know. I'm not feeling it.
She's just too sweet, and she's. Yeah. She's not going to be down in the SoCo, like, let's
do this.
Yeah,
really. All right. Yeah. Janis Joplin was
she's a gutter rat.
She's a beast. The best. What? A gutter rat?
A gutter rat.
Gutter rat. Holy crap.
Oh.
She's just, hard living and drugs and rock and roll and sex.
Gutter rat.
Oh, that was way further than any of us were trying to go.
Holy crap.
I meant it as a compliment.
Oh, of course. Who could take it otherwise?
Sounds like a compliment.
Yeah. This is a project that has been in the works for the last 20 years or so. It's called Love, Janis. It's based on a book by the late singer's sister, Laura Joplin. And so far, over the past two decades, a lot of actors have been attached to the project and never made it to the screen. So everyone is sort of looking at this with trepidation. But, in the past, Renee Zellweger initially was tapped to play the role.
Amy Adams was in a conversation. Zooey Deschanel was in a conversation. So
none of these
all
people.
Sweet actresses. It
none
seems
of them.
Like.
Yeah.
None of them are gutter rats.
No, that's right.
That right now.
None of
them.
Pieces of garbage who sit in the gutter who should be set on fire and
no, that was a compliment, Dean.
Right.
Look, I was saying she was a fast living, hard drinking woman. That's
you know, she was not what a gutter rat is.
I
right?
would call
you
that fun.
All right, she's right? fun. Now.
Some would say fun.
Right.
Word.
Or ballsy, or gutsy, or not gutter rat. I don't think anybody would put.
Bean's been
terms.
Pretty consistent for the last couple of weeks. When the rest of us are trying to think of a word, he goes 100 miles further south than any of us were thinking.
Yeah. Well, he's still upset about Billy Bush.
That's true.
Hot tramps.
Today's celebrity birthdays. Michelle Trachtenberg is 31 years old today. Matt Bomer is 39. He's dreamy, right?
He is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Emily Deschanel. You know her as Bones from the show Bones.
The star of Bones.
Bones. She's 40 years old today. Constance Zimmer is 46. Jane Krakowski from 30 Rock, 48 years old. Luke Perry turns 50. Lenny James Morgan on The Walking Dead, 51 years old. Joan Cusack turns 54. And former NFL great Steve Young, quarterback for the Niners, now an NFL broadcaster. He's 55 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
It's time for Dodger baseball.
Almost, Finn. Game four today is going to be Dodgers versus Nationals at 2:05. You can listen to it on AM 570, your Dodger station. And our friend Matt Money Smith from the Petrus Money Radio Show joins us back on K-Rock right now. Hey, Money, how are you, man?
What's happening, Bean? Hey, Kev.
So you're up till what? Almost midnight last night, trying to find out what time the Dodgers play today and what time you guys work today.
You know, I was laying in bed with the wife, and it was 11 o'clock, and my alarm goes off at 4:30 because I have NFL Network right now. And I said, I swear to God, if I were in San Francisco, I would beat the hell out of both of these managers for not getting this thing figured out by now.
So, explain why that is. Explain why what happened with the Cubs-San Francisco game last night directly affects you and the Dodgers.
And obviously, who am I to complain? You know, this is what pays my salary and you know, makes me a pretty healthy amount of cash.
Right.
It's all about TV. So the fact that they canceled that game on Saturday between the Dodgers and Nationals is just nuts. You know, there were scattered showers. There wasn't really a threat of rain, but just in case, because God forbid the Dodgers and Nationals and Cubs and Giants play at the same time on a Saturday night, mm-hmm. they decide to cancel the game and move it to Sunday morning, 10 a.m. Pacific time. And then yesterday, because they want the Giants and Cubs in prime time, those players had to play a game Sunday at 10 a.m. Pacific time, get on a plane, get home about – they landed at around midnight. They probably got into their beds around 1, and they're ready for first pitch at 2 p.m. Yesterday, just all because of TV. So to your question, why was that game last night so important? Well, if the Cubs sweep the Giants, then there is no other game but Dodgers-Nationals today. They get a little bit extra rest. They don't have first pitch until 5 o'clock. Well, instead, you want Cubs-Giants primetime. So now the Dodgers.
That has to be weird mentally as a player to not know when your start is tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, we were talking to Oral Hershiser, and obviously no better person to ask when you think about, you know, the workload that he took on in 1988. I mean, it is one of the greatest runs by a pitcher. It was, you know, for people that don't remember that, just think of what Madison Bumgarner did, you know, for the Giants a couple years ago, and that's what Oral essentially did, you know, came out of the pen in relief a day after he started, threw a complete game, you know, another complete game, things like that. And what he said was, for the players, they don't care.
They don't care.
He's like, it's not ideal, but pretty much everyone has the same mindset, and that's we'll sleep in November. Until then, just tell us when to be here. We'll go out and be ready to go.
And I feel like as of midnight last night, they still didn't know who the starting pitchers were.
I think they're still struggling.
Really?
Yeah, just because of Clayton's back. I mean, if Kershaw didn't have the 2.5, you know, month layoff this season with the back, I think it would be a no-brainer, and he would go. He's done it before.
I think it's still a no-brainer.
Yeah, I do too, and I would be really surprised.
So you pitch Clayton on 4 days instead of 5 just because it doesn't matter if it doesn't matter how he feels if they lose today.
Well,
he doesn't get a chance to pitch again.
Remember, it's 3 days rest. So
but he pitched Friday, right?
Yeah, so it's 3 days rest. And he did it last year, and he threw 7 innings, allowed a run, and the Dodgers beat the Mets and staved off elimination, you know, and got it to that game 5. So it's just, I think it's one of those things where you would hate to put Urias out there and know that you had Clayton.
Right.
And he was willing to go, and you could have gone with him. So you have to, you know, and then whatever. You figure out game five on Thursday when it's time to figure it out. In the meantime, make sure you don't get knocked out.
Right. But the thing is, and you tell me if this makes a difference, I mean, is the 3 days all that matters, or is the fact that he labored so hard on Friday? I mean, he was just, you know, sweating and weak and pitched 108 pitches and didn't look sharp enough to lead with the lead, but still it wasn't Clayton that we knew.
No, you hear that all the time from the pitchers, is they will, or, you know, the baseball people we talk to, they say there's a difference between innings and stressful innings, and Clayton pitched five stressful innings, and that is a big difference than going out like Jake Arrieta did last night, where he was just mowing through the Giants for seven.
And how much,
six, whatever it was, you know,
how much difference is it in delaying two days or not? How much difference is pitching on 3 days rest instead of five?
You know, I think it's just it's more of a modern thing, you know, and it's a schedule you get on, you know, and I think like all of us, we operate on a schedule, you know, whatever your schedule. Maybe, you know, Bean's got to wake up early and walk to the post office, or he doesn't feel like his day is ready.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, we all have our things. Yeah, kind of dodgy, you know, the pitchers, they go hard the day after they start. They rest the following day. Long pause in that, you know, and when you're not on that schedule, you just don't feel there's something that's not quite right. And you wonder if it's so off-putting that you're not going to be your same dominant self.
We're talking to our friend Matt Money Smith on the Kevin and Bean Show for the Petros and Money Show. You can hear them on AM 570 starting at 10 o'clock today until 1, then the pregame show, and then the Dodgers at 2:05. This may be a stupid question, Matt, and I don't even know if there's an answer for you, but why is it that there are teams like the Giants who just have another gear when it gets into the playoffs? You don't see very many teams like that, but it's almost impossible to beat them in October.
And yet when they're up against elimination.
Elimination? Yeah. I heard they've won their last 10 games in October that were elimination games. That's an astonishing statistic.
The Cardinals come to mind, and, well, number one, you got to have an ace. And when you have Madison Bumgarner, who is great in the regular season but takes it up another level, even though he did not pitch that well last night, that helps. You know, you have someone that can rest the bullpen, give you seven or eight innings. So that's kind of where it starts, and the Cardinals always seem to have that, whether it was Wayne, right, you know, just modern era when you think about it. And plus they have, you know, what baseball people call, I'm doing the air quotes, professional hitters. Hitters that aren't going up there free-swinging, taking hacks at the first pitch. They work counts, you know, and they just grind you and work your ass until you're in the eighth inning and you're like, man, F these effing guys. I am so sick of them. And you just mentally start to break down, and inevitably that's when you look at their games, that's how they typically play out. They're not getting a five spot on you in the first inning and just cruising. It's usually a late inning, seventh, eighth, ninth inning, big hit to take a lead and then close it out. And that really is just demoralizing, you know, emotionally for a squad.
Well, look, it's never fun to be eliminated. Obviously, all the teams but one are going to be gone at some point in the postseason. But I just feel like there's been so much momentum in the second half of the season for the Dodgers, and it's been so much fun, and we've had the, you know, the win for Vin and everything. It would just be tragic to see it end today. Tragic.
They have no business losing this series to this team, not with all the injuries the Nationals have had to deal with. You know, the one concern, I think, is that that bullpen has been used so heavily all season long, and you wonder if yesterday was kind of that first sign of it cracking, because it is just overused. And when you have those two games that close together, you had to use the bullpen in all three of these games now heavily. You know, Kenta Maeda came out yesterday in the third. That's a major concern, because they're probably going to have to go to the bullpen tonight, or today, I should say, at the 2 o'clock first pitch early because of Kershaw on short rest and how stressful those innings were, and the back injury, and it's just whether or not can it hold up. Can Blanton give you one more? You know, can Kenley Jansen give you five outs if you need it to get that thing back to Washington on Thursday? And then you try to figure out who the hell pitches that game. You know, I don't know if Rich Hill can do it on 3 days rest,
right,
the guy that pitched in game two.
All right, well, fingers crossed, I guess. So we'll look for you and P at 10 o'clock and then the game at 2, right?
Yep, 10 a.m. We'll take it up to pregame at 1, and then first pitch just after 2 o'clock. I'm guessing it's going to be Kershaw, and I would assume Dusty Baker's going to go with Scherzer, who, by the way, is the only guy with more strikeouts in Major League Baseball than Clayton Kershaw in the last.
So at least there's that.
Yeah.
At least there's that.
So they got that going for them.
Well, thanks for leaving us on a hopeful note, Matt. We really appreciate that.
Hey,
all right,
take
dude.
That with you the rest of the morning.
Have a good one. See you soon.
All right. See you.
It is Halloween time, and one of the things that people love about this time of year is going to Not Scary Farm.
Right.
It's a Southern California tradition, and we have got a deal for you. Not Scary Farm front-of-the-line passes giving you unlimited priority access to all 9 mazes. So all you have to do is call. Hey, who's on the phone, by the way?
Brad Williams.
Oh, Brad Williams.
Yes, but finish your cell.
All you have to do is call later on today's Kevin and Bean show when you hear us playing the all-time Kevin and Bean Halloween classic, Two Eyeballs. Give me a little bit of that, would you please?
This is just so you recognize it. This is not the actual contest. It's just so you recognize the song when it comes on again.
Kevin and Bean listener Mikal Britt sent this in to us a few years ago. He was 10 at the time he made it. And I got to tell you, it gets stuck in your head.
You can't understand a word of it, but other than that, we love it.
This is him with his little tape recorder doing a Halloween song called Two Eyeballs. Does he sing at some point, or?
He's sort of talk rapping.
Yeah, he's letting you know the story right now.
Two eyeballs.
There it is.
There it is, right there. You'll recognize that part.
All right, so when you hear it, when you hear Two Eyeballs coming up at any time later this morning on the Kevin and Bean Show, we'll take callers 20 through 24. You'll win those front-of-the-line passes for Not Scary Farm. All right, this is awesome. We do have our friend Brad Williams on the phone. He sent us a text late last night. Something momentous is happening in his life. Brad?
Yes, sir.
Thanks for jumping on, man. How you feeling?
I'm feeling great this morning.
No buyer's remorse?
Well, no, because, I mean...
I like that Bean immediately goes negative before we even talk about what's going on.
Yeah, that's exactly... But I think when I texted all you guys last night, I think I called that. I think I said Bean would immediately say, what? Why?
Yeah.
Explain to our listeners and your fans, Brad, what momentous occasion happened last night in your life.
Last night... you know what? I think that everyone should always follow the life choices of a beer mug.
I'm sorry, what?
I think that's what everyone should do.
Okay.
Everyone should just do what beer mug does. Whatever beer mug does, that's what you should.
So you went to the streamies?
That's how you should live your life.
So apparently no more dieting. This is great news for us.
You're smoking a lot of weed?
No, smoking tons of weed.
All right.
No more dieting.
Good.
Buy a new car so you can drive for Uber. Then never
the
drive
adult,
for Uber.
Right. Run in place out in your backyard to get in shape.
Sure. And but the main thing that I did that beer mug inspired me is last night I got engaged.
Yay!
Ladies
to a lady.
Gentlemen.
To a lady. Yeah.
So, wow. That is a great question.
Excellent, Brad.
But I thought you were superstar comedian out there just, hitting it and quitting it, playing the field out on the road.
Hitting it and quitting it.
That's what I thought. Look,
no.
how many Showtime comedy specials have you done, Brad?
Two.
Okay, well, you can't be tied down if you're that kind of famous.
Oh, wow.
Still with the negativity.
Yeah.
Look, that's our man Bean. So you texted us last night and you said you got engaged.
Yes. Yes.
And we all congratulated you. And what did Bean say?
What did Bean say? I'm trying to go through the text. I literally just woke up.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
Don't do it is
don't
what
do
I
it.
Said. Brad, a lot of people want to know because you're such a funny guy. You're such a creative guy. Was the pressure on you to propose in some memorable way so that your lady has a story to tell all of her friends?
Well, see, I would think that being proposed to by a midget, that's story number one.
That's not bad.
You already win.
That isn't bad.
Not that many people have that story. That, you know, it's almost like, oh, he rode in on an elephant with horns playing.
That would have been better.
Yeah, I have a dwarf.
She did have a dwarf. That's true. So, straight up proposal, was it dinner or there at the your place or what? How'd you do it?
I did it at my place. She had kind of a stressful day a couple days ago, and I thought, let's do it at the place, and then it was sort of the under disguise of I'm just trying to make you feel better after a tough day. So I lined the place with rose petals, went right out to the balcony. On the balcony, there was candles making a circle, and I was standing in the middle of the circle. And our song was playing as she walked in the door.
What's your song?
I was wearing a suit.
What's your song?
Well, obviously, it's the Oompa Loompa song. That's our song.
So romantic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it happened one time because the iPod was on shuffle, and during a key moment, that song came on. So, you know, that's kind of how you got to go. No,
Brad, can I suggest that you not waste money on inviting Bean?
Oh, I'm not.
Yes.
How dare you? I thought we were friends.
Yes.
Bean's not going to get an invitation. No.
Excellent. How dare you? You know why? Because Bean's not going to go. So here's what happens.
How dare you?
Bean gets the invitation, immediately RSVPs no, because he doesn't want to go, but insists, throws a temper tantrum if he doesn't get an invitation. And you're doing exactly the right thing, Brad.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like you need to invite him for the gift.
You know he's not going to come, so just at least get the gift. The gift of what? A picture of a naked former USC running back?
I mean, maybe.
Maybe.
That's probably too important to him, but
you wish. Was she surprised, Brad?
There were tears, yeah. But joy tears.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you clarified.
I confirmed it.
When are you guys getting married?
No idea. We have absolutely no clue. I just knew that I've had the ring for 3 weeks, and it was burning a hole in my pocket, so I knew I had to do it. So
if I tried to hang on to a ring for 3 weeks, I would have lost it the second day.
Hold on. Let me give you onion ring.
Well, Brad, when we saw your text, we were very happy for it. We know that you've been, you know, crazy for this girl for a while now, so I'm really pleased she said yes, and I think it's awesome. So congratulations, man.
Thank you, Bean. Your invitation is not in the mail.
Yeah. How dare you?
You're doing the right thing. Thanks, Brad.
Ralph, I feel like you were walking around with a countdown clock taped to your chest for the last 6 months waiting for Supergirl to return last night. Are you happy now? Finally, your Supergirl is back on the CW?
I'm so glad, first of all, that the show's on the CW, where it belongs. And I'm also just thrilled that last night's season premiere for season two was as good as I anticipated.
It was great, wasn't it?
I'm a huge fan of that show. And, of course, the big news was that they were introducing Supergirl's cousin. I don't know his name. I forget the guy's name.
Clark Kent?
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Superman.
Superman.
Yeah, was coming to the show.
Uh-huh.
And we got our introduction last night. A guy named Tyler Hoechlin came in and crushed it as Superman. And, hey, wait a minute. He's right here.
He's right here.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tyler Hoechlin has joined us. How are you, sir?
Hello. Very good. Thank you. How are you guys doing?
Had you seen the episode before it aired last night on the CW?
I had not, actually. That was the first time I got a chance to take a look at it. And
How did you do?
I am my own worst critic, so I still think I've failed miserably. But no, it was fun. It was fun to see, you know, how everything turns out. And it's crazy, like, the effects and the way that they do that, because a lot of the stuff when we shoot it, you go, this looks so stupid.
Right.
Standing with your arms out.
Standing with the arms out and honestly, like, leaving in the middle of a scene, it's the most saddening thing ever when you have a Superman outfit on. And in the middle of the scene, you have to fly away.
Yeah.
Because really, that means you jump about a foot in the air.
Right.
And then immediately come back down to the ground. And then everybody else freezes as you run off camera to let them resume the scene.
Is that right?
It's just like
a scared little girl.
Oh, my God. It's the worst thing ever. Yeah. It's not a good run. It's not like rounding the bases run. It's like, it's just awkward.
When you flew into the DEO through that window last night, I was like, oh, Superman's back. That was one of those moments. And they do such high-quality special effects on all the Berlanti shows, on The Flash and Arrow and Legends. For a television budget, it's amazing the work they do with the special effects.
Yeah,
it really is.
And it really helps us out, too, because it's one of those things where you do, every once in a while, have to do something that feels incredibly stupid.
Right.
But when you can trust the team to make it look good, you're like, okay, I'll take this embarrassment for the next few minutes. I know eventually it'll look good.
We were talking a little bit about, in the other room, about taking on the character of playing Superman. Mm-hmm. And we were having a conversation, and I mentioned, I can't imagine a role other than maybe Jesus where more people have expectations and familiarity with the role. It must have been incredibly daunting for you to say yes to this.
Yeah, I don't really know what it was. It was the strangest thing with this job. We went down to Comic-Con in San Diego this summer, and I was talking to someone, and they were like, so you're getting pretty nervous? And I said, honestly, I don't know why. This makes no sense to me, but I've never been more calm going into a role. And I think it was only because – Greg Berlanti and Andrew Kreisberg, the producers, and I had a meeting, and that's how I got the job, was with meeting them. And I think we just kind of all clicked really quickly about what we found interesting about the character. So anytime I think you can go into something and artistically just commit to your idea of it, it kind of takes away that pressure of you're not trying to make it right for somebody else. You're just trying to tell a certain story. And so if you commit to that.
So it didn't bother you that people might respond to your vision completely differently? They expected something else and they wanted something else?
No, because I feel like a couple of years ago as an actor, I made this like great revelation. It's like so much stress out of my life of like, I'm not trying to be right for somebody else. I'm just trying to do what I find interesting and what I would like to attempt to get across. And if people like it, then great. And then I'm the right person for it. Like, I would have much rather gotten this response or a completely horribly negative response and then been like, okay, well, he's not the right guy. Like, it's
so much cool with you.
Yeah, but it's so much nicer to know that like you're either quote unquote succeeding or failing by other people's expectations by committing to something that you kind of believed in from the beginning.
Right.
As opposed to like, oh man, I didn't think that was right either, but I thought that's what they wanted, so I did it.
Yeah.
And then
you
still
can't chase
miss.
Other people's ideas.
No, you just kind of have to jump in with what you believe in and go for it. So, yeah.
I gotta tell you, what I loved about the show last night is what I loved about season one, which is that the Supergirl and now you, Superman, you're so lighthearted and happy. You're smiling most of the time, and she's just so likable, and you're likable. I like that they didn't change that.
Yeah, coming into it the whole time, and that was really informative for me too. Watching the first season was seeing how optimistic and bright this whole world was and what Melissa had done with Kara and Supergirl. And she's fantastic. And so
she's fantastic.
She's incredible. She's so much fun to work with. And I had the pleasure of knowing her even before that because her husband and I did a film together like about 2 years ago. And so to be able to work with her was just a blast. And they've done such a great job of setting that tone. It's just something that they've really been able to kind of keep consistent as well.
And it's not – they don't treat the material lightly. It's not as if they're making pretend this isn't a real world. It's very grounded, and the stories are real, but there's just a charm and a joy about the work that you don't find, unfortunately, I think, in a lot of comic book properties now.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's kind of, I guess, an analogy. I always fall back to sports just because that's where I grew up. But I feel like it's kind of like, you know, there's certain people who go out and compete really intensely, and then the press conference afterwards is just as intense. And there's people who go out and compete, and then afterwards they're laughing in the locker room and kind of taking it easy. And it's just one of those things, like, business is business, and when you have to kind of be serious and buckle down, you can. But there's also a time to be lighthearted and have fun and just enjoy. So,
This is the voice of actor Tyler Hoechlin on The Kevin and Bean Show. He is Superman on Supergirl, Monday nights at 8 on the CW. I have to ask, and I apologize because I know you've been asked this all the time, but when you put on the suit, Tyler.
Yes.
Look, I know you're an actor and you played a freaking werewolf, so you can do a lot of things. You've got a great imagination. But when you put on the suit, what does that do for you? I mean, how does that make you feel?
It's definitely – the first few times you're definitely overly aware of it, I think. Because when you walk on set and you kind of see, you know, everybody kind of stop and look.
Right.
It's not every day that you see, like, a full-on Superman costume that's, you know, been paid a lot of attention to and a lot of money for. So you're definitely kind of aware of, like, the eyes and heads turning. And it's also strange because, like, it's – I know they're not looking at me. They're looking at the suit.
They're looking at
like,
Superman,
just,
right?
Yeah, they're looking at Superman, and it's such a weird concept. But I think – I mean, it was cool. The best thing about it was we had a day on set where – we were out in public, and there were about four kids. They're like 7, 8 years old, two boys, two girls. And one of the PAs went over and grabbed him and was like, hey, would you come and talk to him? I was like, yeah, sure. So I had the suit on, and that was a cool moment of like, for these kids for 10 minutes, like, I'm just Superman. Like, they don't know who I am, which is great. I love that. It was like, this is not about me. They don't know who I am, what my name is. It's just Superman for like 10 minutes.
Did one of those kids say, fly?
Yeah, it's like you're not the real Superman. You
have, bend some steel,
bitch. I saw you prance over here. You did not fly in.
Is it true that you got to gain weight for this role?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
It's a dream.
It is.
What a dream role.
It is.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, eating donuts and putting on a gun.
No,
I don't think that's that kind of weight gain.
I don't
think that's it.
I think it's lifting heavy weights as well.
There was some weights involved, but there was a lot of pizza and pasta and Chinese food, and it was just kind of I mean, when you kind of find out that you have something like this to do, and not you don't have 3 or 4 or 5 months to prepare for it, but I think I had about 5 weeks when I found out I had the job and then I was going to shoot. So I was like, okay, so this is like really, really bulk up time. So it was just everything I could possibly eat, like eating a dinner before I met my friends for dinner kind of thing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So do they help you out with
– so good.
Take it easy, Ellen.
Do they help you out with some ribbing or padding or anything like that in the suit, or is it all you?
The suit has like some stuff in it for like detail and definition on it. It's like something weird they told me, like your skin actually like – no matter what you do, like, you could put Schwarzenegger in this suit and it still wouldn't show definition just because of the material. So they put, like, a little bit of rubber stuff just to kind of help you out a little bit. So
how's the cape to walk around with? Is it heavy?
Yeah. It's like a full-on, like, real leather cape. It's really? Got some weight to it. Yeah. So it definitely helps with, like, they're always like, keep your shoulders back. I'm like, I'm not even trying. Like, it's just it's where they go. So, yeah.
To fall over backwards. Yeah. Right now.
When it comes to flying, I've done segments where you've been harnessed in and done that, and I don't have what men have.
Yeah, I know. Kills. I feel like I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
How does does it get easier for you?
I only had one day of it so far, so it was getting used to it. No, that was not a getting used to situation. But it's kind of one of those things. Like anytime you're in a thing where like the guy came up, he's like, "Hey, it's you're gonna get sick of it after a while. Like, let us know if you need a break." And I have the great fortune that my dad is like an emergency room doc, and like I know what his schedule is and I know what his day is like. So anytime I kind of start to feel sorry for myself or like, oh, this is not the best, I go, never mind. Yeah. Dad's probably working.
Wow. I could have a real job.
Things are okay. Yeah. It's like, at the end of the day, I'm flying around in
plus,
a Superman costume.
Plus, if things
costume,
get too
I'm
tight,
okay.
Your dad can fix things.
Exactly. Right? He's always there. Yeah.
He's Superman, yeah, right. And his dad is a surgeon. So you're basically doing okay with your life.
How far away are National City and Metropolis?
I'm gonna go ahead and guess. I'm gonna guesstimate somewhere
being
around.
Being it's a map, if you could get a map for him, he would.
I'm confused though.
I'm gonna guess about 2,987 miles.
Really?
That's about where I'm gonna go.
You're that far apart?
Somewhere around there. Yeah. Not that I'm comparing any other two major U.S.
not.
Cities or anything.
Of course,
yeah.
That's not what you're
saying. Somewhere around there.
Because that would be ridiculous.
All right. So Superman decides on the spoiler alert on last night's episode that he's gonna stick around National City, right,
yeah,
for a while.
Yeah.
Right. Does he go back and get his stuff, or does he just start over?
Crap! What is wrong with you, Asperger's? What do you mean, does he go get his
do you
stuff?
You have it sent to you?
Well, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he could go get his stuff and be back in about 3 minutes.
What kind of
like,
question
it's
is that?
It's kind of like walking next door. You just fly across the country.
Would you rent a car, or would you think you would probably get a lease? It would probably be more financially advantageous to
you. You sign a year lease, how does it work?
Look, I got questions, all right?
You got problems. You don't have questions.
All right. We need to take a break. Ralph, will you give up your time today so we can spend a little bit more with Mr. Heckler?
Gladly, because I want to talk to Superman about what to do when an evil billionaire is trying to take over the world. I think that's advice we can use these days. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no kidding. We'll take a break. We'll come right back on K-Rock. So I dress up in a kid-friendly outfit and go to the park to meet kids, and now I'm on a watch list. Geez. Tyler Hoechlin does it. He's a hero. That's that's my takeaway from his story.
Tyler Hoechlin is Superman in the TV show Supergirl.
Right.
You're super creep.
You're super creep. Our guest is Tyler Hoechlin in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Supergirl came back last night on the CW, and it will air every Monday night at 8. And Superman is now living in National City for a while anyway, right, Tyler?
He's going to stick around for a little bit. And I was going to say, man, if it makes you feel any better, the last movie I did, I think it was your favorite, actually. I had a horrible, horrible porn stash. So when I went to the park, I was also a creep for
right.
a good 3 months. Yeah. So
it's no
just
fun,
make
it
feel better.
It,
yeah. No, it's really not. It's really not. You feel guilty for no reason. Yeah.
But Tyler has a reason.
All right, Ralph, you got some Superman canon questions. Go.
Well, I was just wondering, you mentioned that you had a meeting with Berlanti and Kreisberg talking about what you guys all agreed on in terms of your take on the character. And it seems like right now that the current fashion is to make all these superheroes sort of dark and gloomy and serious and grim. And you guys obviously have not taken that path, which I think with Superman particularly is the kind of the right way to go. Mm. But what were the things that you connected up with in the character, which can some say be hard to play because he is sort of a god among men and he's got all these powers and stuff. What is it that attracted you to the character that I thought you did so well with last night?
Oh, thank you. I think for me, you know, we talked about a lot of the things that you did see in the episode. We also talked about a lot of things that weren't necessarily in the episode, and those being some of the more like conflicted things that he might go through, you know, the struggles that he might actually have. And even though we don't address those in that episode, I think that's something that we just kind of knew was underneath the surface of him. But then what we wanted to really show was him being able to pass that knowledge on to Kara. And so, like, the scene last night between them, spoiler, sorry, if you haven't seen it, but where she's kind of asking him for advice, like, how do you live all of these lives and do it without losing your mind? Like,
that's the interesting thing.
That's it. She has a lot of trouble with her personal life.
Well, she's new at it. Right. He's been doing it for a while.
And that's the
and
thing.
I like that, that's how it came up.
Yeah, and it's like it's not. This is not his origin story. This is not like we're not finding out who he is. The world knows who Superman is at this point, and so this is really him coming in to support her, help her, give some wisdom where he can. And that's really like that's kind of his mission here. And so like that's why it's not something coming in where like, oh, Superman is now coming in to take charge. Like, no. He's literally here to help her, to support her, to do whatever he can and just be of assistance. And that's kind of what
the word is the first two episodes. Is that correct?
Right now.
Okay.
So we saw you last night. We'll see you next week. And then we'll have to wait and see where you
And then it's TV land. So you never know.
Yeah.
How do you like playing Clark Kent?
Clark is fun, man. It's one of those things. Superman is kind of it's that. Oh my God, I'm playing Superman, and it's very iconic. But there are certain staples that you know kind of make up Superman that you have to stick to. So you have a little bit of freedom with it. You can have some fun with it. But there are a lot of things that are very consistent that you kind of have to abide by. And Clark is the human side of it, and so it's really up for interpretation. And it was fun. That's it's kind of like the klutziest I've been able to play with a character. And it's a lot of fun to kind of just let that go and not hold back. So I think there are probably some takes that are even more outrageous that are on the cutting room floor. But it's fun to be able to kind of just push the envelope that way and then, you know, let them decide where it falls. But
you don't have to worry about looking cool. You can just kind of
It's so great to just let that go and just kind of like, okay, everything that I do that I afterwards go, God, why did I do that? I'm actually going to intentionally do that now and hope that people find it endearing, I guess. Yeah.
The writing I thought was great last night in support of your character. And there was a moment where you fly into the DEO and everyone is in awe, as you mentioned, just people are when they see Superman. Yeah. He's in that costume. And your character went out of his way to go up and start shaking hands with people to make them feel as comfortable as possible in his presence.
Yeah.
I said, that's the nature of the guy. He makes a choice every day that he wants to help people and to do whatever he can to make people feel better.
You know? Yeah, I think that was an important thing. And I think that's one of the things that Greg and Andrew and I talked about. It's, you know, he realizes what he is as a symbol to people.
Alien.
Yeah, exactly. For everybody.
Positive, that's the
point. He's a citizen of the world. And but it's like he realizes what that responsibility is and what that is to everybody. But I don't think that he necessarily enjoys it. I think he takes it on and just realizes that that's what he is to people, and so he will be that for them.
It's sort of his responsibility.
Yeah, but he wants everybody else to feel like they can also be Superman. I think that's
even though
at the end of the day, they can't do they can't do what he does, but like they can still act in the same way that he does. And I think that's really the important thing about him. It's not what he's capable of doing. That just happens to be his physical and given talents and abilities. But it's the intention, it's the decisions that he makes to be that person. I think that's what he's trying to inspire in others, which is that you can still do that. You can't fly, but you can you can go. You know, pull that kid off the sidewalk when the car's getting too close, whatever. Anything that you are capable of doing, as long as you do it and do it with good intentions, then you're doing the same thing I am.
We can be Superman adjacent.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Exactly.
I like it.
Everybody knows a little bit something about Superman. Did you have to go into a deep dive when you got the part?
I went into a deeper dive than I usually do. Yeah. I don't usually Google Superman.
Were you
Superman
a comic book
on
kid at all when growing up? Were you?
I didn't really catch the comic books. I was. I played baseball like really competitively from the time I was about honestly like 5 or 6 years old. I started playing like year round when I was 7 or 8.
Wow.
And then I started acting when I was about 8. So between those two things, that kind of really, and school, I guess. You know, school
there. school, that other,
you gotta throw that other thing in there that's mandatory. That kind of took up most of my time. But I mean, I always enjoyed the genre. I always enjoyed, you know, Batman, Superman, and all these guys. So I was familiar with it, but I definitely did a little bit more research and kind of more like a lot of origins research of like, you know, when the comic first came out and things like that. So, but I did stay intentionally away from the shows, the movies. I didn't go back and look at any of that stuff. I didn't want to have any awareness of, you know, being on set and going, oh, you know, that's a little bit too Reeves.
Subconsciously.
Yeah, I didn't want to have any awareness of that. So if something ends up being similar, sorry, not intentional. If it's like completely off, again, not aware of it. It's just the ideas that we had and ran with. So, yeah.
We are out of time. Let me ask the Ralph, you're going to have to let go of Tyler's
life.
I want to ask.
I'm Superman's pal.
Because you played baseball in high school and then played it in college, did there come a day where you realized, oh, this is going to be the end? I can't get it, you know, go professional? And did you already have acting in your back pocket at that point, or did you have to make a career change?
I had acting. I'd been acting since I was 8. I've been balancing both for a long time. And there was a very specific day I had a meeting with my head coach, and I had turned down a role in – I usually don't say the film, but whatever. I turned down a role in Twilight the year before, going into the season, because it was 2 weeks before our season was starting, and I had the starting job at second base. And I was just like, I can't leave for 6 weeks and bail on these guys. We were preseason top 10, supposed to go back to Omaha. And so I stuck around. Missed out on that job. Zero regrets. I would have questioned it had I done the other way. But
you kind of played a dog. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
that.
I know. Totally.
I played a wolf later. It was fine.
I did it. I still got to do the wolf. For a very long time. And but I had a meeting with my coach, and he just said, "Look, he's like, you can stay here and play, but I feel like you're splitting your attention, and you've got a really unique opportunity in LA. He's like, you can stick here. You'll probably play a little bit of pro ball. Who knows where you'll go? Because that usually you get drafted and then." It's a crapshoot from there. Like, you got to be really good
to
get to the big
leagues.
People
make it, right.
Exactly. And he's like, I've done this for a long time. You have a very unique opportunity. I would encourage you to go and pursue
that. Did that bum you out a little bit about baseball?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Totally. Yeah.
Because you had dreams probably of playing for the Angels or something.
Oh, my God. I mean, that was like playing pro ball was my first dream and passion. And I always said that I would never stop until someone literally to my face told me to hang them up. So when I had that conversation,
that
it was kind of that. Yeah, it was a very like I felt in that moment that this was not the conversation or the situation to resist. It was actually like the world kind of giving me exactly what I needed to hear. And it was kind of great because that was on a Friday. And so I got to play that last series. On Sunday, we went on a walk-off hit in the ninth. So it's like we got the dogpile on the field. It's like I knew my last three games were my last three games, and that's actually the best thing that could have happened to me because a lot of times you're just told, like, hey, you're done after the game.
It's nice to go out on your own terms rather than
and just to know. I mean, for 3 days, I got to remember what I loved about playing baseball, which was, like, just being on the field with the guys. Like, stretching was great. Warming up was great. Being in the dugout between innings
stretching
was great.
Stretching isn't great.
Like,
let's be honest.
It is now. Now that I don't do it anymore, I realize how important it was and how much better I used to feel. But it was, like, kind of savoring those moments of like, oh, this is what's so great about the game. And I also love that I got out before I had too much resentment from it becoming a job or anything. I still love the game. So eventually I'd love to go back and coach or something someday, but we'll see.
Well, that's that's a great answer. And we're happy. All of us are happy that it worked out the way it did because it's great having you as an actor.
Thank you. Enjoy
your work. And you were tremendous last night. We can't wait to see what you do next Monday night at CW Supergirl at 8 p.m. Ladies and gentlemen, Tyler Hoechlin.
Thank you guys very much.
A lot of fun.
Thank you.
This is going to be fun, by the way. Listen to this. John Cleese next hour on The Kevin and Bean Show. And while we're talking about hilarious comedian, Sarah Tiana has just stepped in. Hey, Sarah.
Hi, I'm good.
I can't believe we've never had you on the program before.
I know. I'm so excited to be on here.
You know who talks you up every time he's in? Is Jeff Ross.
Oh, Jeffrey.
No, it's upsetting. Like every time he's like, you know who you guys need.
Yeah, we're like, all right, okay.
We'll book her.
So we're just trying to shut him up. That's why we said yes to disappear.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah. It's hard to do. Yeah.
You have worked with Jeff on roasting, right? On writing for roasts and whatnot?
Yeah, we've been writing together for maybe 7 or 8 years. And then I started on The Burn with him.
Okay.
Which was our show on Comedy Central. And then we've just been writing on roast ever since. And then I started doing the roast battle at the Comedy Store. And then here we are.
And that's a crazy form of comedy to write the roast.
It's
so different.
It is really hard because, like, I will go from that to, like, writing the ESPYs, which is, like, so Disney, you know, because it's ESPN. So you're like, oh, man. They're like, this joke is not going to get on. And you're like, oh, I'm sorry. I just thought that a joke.
Because you're so used to being completely uncensored as a stand-up comedian, and then you realize, oh, now I'm writing for Suits.
Yeah, because, you know, then you're like, I write this joke, like, when Jerry Buss died, like, I wrote a joke of, I was like, oh, finally a Laker that can pass. And, like, I thought it was such a good joke. And everyone's like, no, we're not putting that on.
I'm a Laker fan, and that's a funny joke.
It's a pretty good
joke. That's a funny joke.
It was really relevant at the time.
Sure.
More relevant at the time.
Now, Sarah, this most recent Comedy Central roast, the Rob Lowe one, you worked on that one, right?
Yes, I did, yeah.
You wrote Peyton Manning's stuff, or at least assisted with it, right?
Yeah. Peyton was my project, yeah.
I think this every time I see his commercials, too. He's got really good comedy timing for an athlete, doesn't he?
Oh, my gosh. He's so good. And I was actually assigned to him because out of the 13 writers on the roast, I was the only one that knew anything about football.
Really?
Which is amazing for me.
So when you're sitting there and you're, I mean, as a football fan your whole life, now you're working with Peyton Manning. I mean, you got to be a little bit in awe of that.
And I was really nervous to meet him because I went to Georgia and he was at Tennessee when I was at Georgia. And so I've actually been a huge fan of his since college. And, I, you know, they say don't meet your heroes.
Yeah.
I was so nervous that he was just going to be the worst person ever. And he was not. He could not have been better. And he definitely looked at everything like a playbook. Like, I wrote this joke about Rob Riggle, which I don't think made it on the air, which was like, you know, like, Rob Riggle, what I've learned from you about being a sports commentator is that you don't have to be funny or charming or entertaining or know anything about sports or be able to conceal your boner whenever Terry Bradshaw's in the room. And Peyton is, like, looking at that last part, and I'm like, oh, man, okay, he doesn't like that joke. And then he just goes, you know, I just feel like that's more of a compliment to Terry Bradshaw.
That's weird.
And I'm like, yeah, if you analyze it, yeah, absolutely. That's
Are
exactly.
Are you
going
to make me like Peyton?
I know.
That's what's happening right now.
I'm sorry. Ew. Yeah, I know. I know. But he was so funny.
Did he try to sell you some DiGiorno pizza or whatever that is?
Papa John's.
Come on. Yeah.
No, he didn't try to sell me DiGiorno either.
That would have been weird considering it was Papa John's.
Yeah, cool. It would have been.
That's
yeah,
my bad.
He's doing well on the pizza front.
Yes, he is.
Do you guys think that he and Papa John still make out, or do you think that
for
was just
sure.
for the Super Bowl?
They're making out right now.
They might be making out right now.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sarah, I hate to take you so far back, but since this is your first time on the Kevin and Bean Show, I have to ask, what was your in for comedy? Were you a class clown, or is it something?
Oh, man, no.
Where did it come from?
I actually did not know I was funny until I moved to Los Angeles.
Which?
Because, yeah, I mean, I grew up in the South, so, like, I'm very sarcastic, and my whole life people would be laughing and telling me, like, that's not funny.
While
I was like, yeah, while laughing, so I just heard that's not funny. And then I moved to Los Angeles, and everyone's like, oh, my gosh, you're so fun. Like, I just didn't know that the way I grew up was different. I didn't know that, like, people didn't have daycares in their high school. You know, like, I just didn't know that, like, that my life was different. And so once I started talking about the South, it just became.
How did you start? What was your first time that you started? Was it just a disaster, or was it all right?
Actually, it was okay
because
my friends have been daring me to do it for a long time, and I didn't really know. I didn't understand stand. I never watched it growing up. I was not a fan. Like, I thought Roseanne started stand-up after her TV show. Like, I was fans of, like, these comics TV shows, but I didn't know that they did stand-up before that. So I didn't know that
you... Who's not aware of stand-up comedy?
Me.
That's strange.
Sarah, yeah. I grew up with a satellite dish that didn't get HBO. So, I just, like, didn't know anything about it. And so my friends were like, you have to do it. And then I saw this happened in L.A., this guy. I was watching the news, and he shot himself with a nail gun or whatever. Like, the nail ricocheted and went up into his eye socket, up into his brain. And he worked the whole day, and everyone's freaking out. And basically the joke was like, well, I wouldn't be able to feel 3.5 inches if I got nailed, so what's the big deal? And, like, that was my first joke, and it
That's
worked.
A strong
and
story.
It worked.
It worked. So I always had one joke that would work. So then I just had to write another one and then another one, and it took a while, but... You know, here we are.
In fact, the reason Sarah is in here today, by the way, is because she's got an event that's happening tomorrow night at the world-famous Comedy Store. This is a benefit, a charity event for the American Parkinson Disease Association. Is that a charity that has a specific reason that you're affiliated with it, Sarah?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, a lot of comedians have suffered from this disease. We just had Robin Williams, obviously, and, like, Mitzi Shore, who actually owns the Comedy Store, suffers from it as well. So it's definitely near and dear to our heart, and the Comedy Store is, like, one of my... is my home away from home. It's the club that I started at. And so anything to give back to that disease and try to help find a cure. And then obviously having it at the Comedy Store means a lot. So, yeah.
That's wonderful. Tickets are available right now for thecomedystore.com. Who's great on the bill that people are going to see in addition to Sarah Tiana?
Oh. Who's great on I was only going to say
addition.
Myself.
Oh, okay.
Well, Ron, and then I think Tony Hinchcliffe is on there. He's another...
Tony's funny.
Yeah, he's another roaster. So, yeah, it's going to be... I mean, it's always a good show. You're not going to have a bad show at the Comedy Store. So it's also a legendary room, and it's in the main room, which is a tough, like, room to ever see shows at. They're always sold out, so it's nice to be able to be in that room.
TheComedyStore.com to buy tickets. The event is tomorrow night. More with our guest, Sarah Tiana, right after this on K-Rock. Comedian Sarah Tiana in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show. How you doing so far, Sarah?
I'm good. I'm more worried about you in New Orleans.
Oh, I'm going to be fine.
I love that you moved from Seattle to New Orleans just so, you know, to get closer to hurricanes.
Yeah.
Is that the reason you moved?
No, I came for black people. I told the guys this. Yeah, the reason I came is because I was tired of there being no black people in Seattle.
Right.
And I wanted to come someplace where there are black people. So
oh, yeah.
Can you stop saying that?
It's true, though. That's the actual truth.
God. Of course, now a lot of the black people from New Orleans live in Houston because they had to evacuate.
Well, there is some of that.
It sounds racist.
Yeah.
It does sound racist.
How dare you? Hey, speaking of traveling, Sarah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say speaking of racism.
Speaking of traveling, I am fascinated. We've talked to Jeff Ross about this, too, but I love that you are one of these comedians who has traveled all over to the war hotspots to entertain the troops.
I know.
And first of all, thank you for doing that. That's lovely. But second of all, what's it like? What's it like for you? Is there fear when you suit up to head to Afghanistan or someplace? Do you suit up?
I do actually to suit up. You have to put on a lot of gear.
I mean, they do make you put on a helmet and a flak jacket and stuff like that when you're coming into where you're going to perform on a helicopter because you're in an active war zone, right?
Yeah, whenever you're downrange, you have to be all suited up. And that's really, the troops are so excited to see a woman, especially when she takes off a helmet from a helicopter that she's in 120-degree weather.
Because of sexy hair?
Oh, yeah. They're like, look at this model coming towards us.
You do look your best in those circumstances.
It's great. Yeah, I've done 12 tours overseas.
12 tours?
Yeah. It's been, I love it, and
do you know somebody that's in the services, or you just...
Yeah, my uncle's a 2-star general, actually, so...
Oh, my.
But, he's in the Air National Guard, so he only gets applause on the weekends for me. but he's, I just grew up in a really small town, and we had recruiters in our lunchroom in high school. And,
every day?
Wow. Yeah, and pretty much.
How about today?
They're probably there. So I just felt like a lot of my friends growing up, that was like their one option to get out, was the military. So I knew a lot of friends. I had friends that were out there. So initially in 2005, that was my first tour in Iraq, and that was Saddam was still alive at the time.
Really?
Is
that until he saw your act? Is that scary?
Yes, and then we got him. We found him in a vulnerable position.
It's the easiest stand-up gig in the world, though, is performing in front of troops who are just starved for entertainment, right?
A little bit, but it's also the more stressful because, like, if I have a bad show in Houston, I'm like, whatever, I have another night here.
Right.
If you have a bad show in front of 300 servicemen who are about to go back to work, you're like, well, this is the only time. If I don't do a good job. A
lot of pressure on this one. If they go out there bummed.
Yeah, I know. So, and you get a lot of amazing being hit on. You get hit on by 19-year-olds in so many clever ways. I didn't realize how many clever ways.
Is that right?
This Marine came up to me once, and he was like, hey, which, Marine language is good evening. And he was like, I know we're having sex tonight. And I was like, well, first, that's a complete sentence, so I'm proud of you. Because I don't know if y'all know Marines. Sentences, that ain't their strongest weapon.
Okay.
So I was real proud of him. He's like, I know we're having sex tonight. I'm like, no, sir. How? And he goes, because I'm stronger than you. And I was like, I know. Like, the woman in me was like, oh my God. But the comic in me was like, that was hilarious.
I give some respect for that, right?
I have so much respect for those kinds of jokes. Yeah, of course. Cool. If it's funny, it's funny.
How was it?
I outranked him, so I was not allowed. I did not want him to get kicked out. Because when you go over there as a comedian, they give you a rank.
Is that right?
So you're like a GS-14 civilian, which is the equivalent of a full bird colonel. So my uncle would always be so mad because he's like, I worked my whole life and I went to Vietnam and you get the same housing that I do because you tell penis jokes.
That's funny.
I'm like, well, sorry. You made your choice.
You should have been funny.
Yeah, sorry.
Speaking of what's offensive, have you run into any of that in recent years? It seems like almost every comedian has made one group irate, and there's been protests and boycotts and everything else. Have you hit a button like that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, definitely the sports jokes and just in the roasting world, you tend to. I remember, like, on The Burn, we always roasted someone that died that week, which to me is still like the nicest thing you can do for someone. I know that sounds. That could just be my own messed up.
I feel like it is.
Yeah. But I just think, oh, my God. I'm like, in giving your memory, like, so much more thought than I might by just saying, like, pray for your family. Like, instead, I'm like, okay, what would be something extremely smart and awesome to say right now?
But also insulting.
That's insulting, but also sensitive, but also, like, makes them, like, reminds people of how awesome they were.
Right.
If that makes any sense. So, like, but we roasted. It was like, we did a too soon segment at the end of The Burn, and And it was this stripper that died in Ohio, and she was like giving a lap dance on like the second on like the balcony, and she fell backwards and burst into glitter. I don't know if you guys know that. That's what
didn't
happened
realize. That's, wow,
yeah.
That's cool.
So, her friends in Ohio were so mad, and they I got a lot of threatening tweets, which I don't really find threatening, but. Yeah, they're
that seems
upset.
To be the thing. That seems to be the thing. Is on Twitter, you have to threaten someone's life. That's the only way to protest anything.
So, yeah.
I don't get it, but that's...
So they were pretty upset. They're like, how could you say that? I'm like, at least she died, you know, giving good head. I mean, she fell on her head, you know, so...
Right, that's what
you meant.
She was
like,
okay,
that's
good.
Really important. Yeah, she fell on her head.
And that calmed them right down.
Yeah, that very much so.
I'm sure that took care of them.
Still, like, one of the best jokes I ever wrote was for Jeff for the... James Franco roast, which they ended up cutting, so I can tell it on the air.
Is it something we can say on the radio show?
Yeah, it is. It was like right after James Gandolfini had passed, and we were talking about James Franco, and I was like, the joke was, James Franco, you're an insult to Italian actors everywhere. James Gandolfini must be trying to roll over in his grave right now. And it was a really perfect joke for that time.
Right.
And it got cut, and I'm like, dang it. Oh, at first, as a writer, you're like, dang it, but then you're like, I get to keep that.
It didn't get burned.
That's mine. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, listen, we're almost out of time, Sarah. I'm sorry to say.
I'm sure you are.
No, we really are. It's 8:31. Tomorrow night, let's hit it again. World Famous Comedy Store, thecomedystore.com. This is you and, like, I don't know, like 10 other comedians up there.
Yeah, and Rick Shapiro is one of the comedians. And he also suffers from the disease. And Ron Bush, who's putting this whole show together, is fantastic, and he works really hard for the program. So it's in the main room at the Comedy Store tomorrow night. And
sounds like a lot of fun.
It's going to be fun.
And again, proceeds going to help raise funds and awareness for the American Parkinson Disease Association. You can follow Sarah on Twitter at Sarah Tiana, and her website is sarahtiana.com. Great to have you come by. Thanks so much.
Thank y'all.
All right, let's take some phone calls now. 1-800-520-1067. It's time for Kevin and Bean's What's Good. Your chance to actually be a part of the show and tell us what you think we're not talking about. If there's TV shows or football teams, you know, that aren't the Atlanta Falcons or
I don't know that there are those.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
You got comments, you got questions, you got complaints, you got problems, whatever it is. We're taking your calls next. 1-800-520-1067. Right after this with Kevin Means, What's Good. We like to include you on the show when we have time. And today's one of those times. 1-800-520-1067. You can call us now on any topic. This is called Kevin Means, What's Good. Hit it,
Steve. We always do it this time. What's on your mind? Your time to shine. Come on and call us up and testify.
Sit down.
What's on your mind? Your time to shine. Come on and call us up and notify. What are we missing and not talking about? Call up, so we can be down. 1-800-520-1067. What's good?
I mean,
Kevin, I've had it.
I've had it too. All right. Why don't we start with Cameron in La Habra, please, line 4 to get us going on this edition of Kevin Means What's Good. Hey, Cameron.
Hey, how's it going? Quick question.
Yes.
Why do you always feel you got to talk to Beer Mug's mom before a big Dodger game? She jinxed us yesterday. Did you watch the game?
I don't feel like Mama Muggs has that kind of juice.
Oh, but it's still just that bad mojo in the air. You know what FAM stands for? A fanatic. Mm-hmm. What gives her the title of a fan if every time you talk to her it's negative?
She is the most negative fan ever, and was also at the game where Kirk Gibson hit the home run and left early and didn't see it.
That's true.
Yeah.
Look, she's been a Dodgers fan her entire life. She loves that team. She watches them every single game. She goes to games. I mean, you can't doubt that she's a fan. Is she jinxing them, or is she just being realistic about their struggles?
No, then we got to give her a new title, because you can't give her the title of a fan if she just, you know, puts them down the whole time. We got to come up with a new word for Mama Muggs instead of a fan, because clearly she is not one.
I feel like you've never been around, like, teams that always lose, like the Red Sox before 2004. This is what they do. Red Sox fans back then. You put down the team. You could be at the parade in 2004. You're like, they're still going to suck next year. That's just how some people are and some fan bases.
I mean, I might just be spoiled growing up in L.A. as a Laker fan.
Sure, right. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Well, yeah. She's surprisingly negative. I got to be honest.
She can't bring most things down.
I think that's why we talk to her, because I've never heard anybody that considers himself a fan that talks more negatively about their team.
It's kind of magic.
I think it's a valid point, though. I'm glad you called, Cameron. We appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Go Let's Dodgers. Go to
Pilar, please. Los Angeles, line 5.
Hey, Pilar.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi. What's going on? Hi. What's good?
I just started a nonprofit organization, so I just wanted to tell everyone about it.
Okay.
It's called Booty MD, and it's all about health of the rear end.
Right, Booty MD.
I love the name. Booty MD is awesome. What should I be looking for down there?
You are looking for anything that causes problems for people, anything that causes pain or itching or bleeding or any problems, pooping.
Oh. All right. This is the best conversation ever.
I want to educate people
about that. Now, Clark, I have to ask, what led you to believe that enough attention wasn't being paid to problems in the butt that you went so far as to start a nonprofit called Booty MD? Like, what was the impetus behind this decision, my dear?
I'm a surgeon, and I take care of a lot of patients with these problems, and
right.
I noticed how nobody has the correct information. People are giving themselves the wrong diagnosis all the time. There's very little information out there, and lots of people suffer from problems, and so I just want to help people and make sure that they get the right information. And,
all right, where can people go, Pilar, for more information from Booty MD?
So bootymd.com or .org, and also I have a Facebook page, and I'm going to make videos soon.
Oh, all right.
Oh, no.
Yes,
no.
A lot of butt videos.
Let me ask you just a quick question. As a Booty MD, butt wipes, good for your butt, bad for your butt?
Oh, no, terrible for your wife.
Oh,
I actually have an article about that, because all the chemicals cause a lot of
I'm so pro butt wipe.
Not anymore.
No.
Really?
Yeah, you're all wrong.
But so clean.
Switch to bidet attachments.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. See, apparently that's a great example of how we've been getting it wrong all these years. Thank you, doctor.
Wow.
We appreciate the call. Let's do one more, and let's make it Andrew, please. Hollywood, line 2, to close out this edition of What's Good.
So many more butt questions.
Hey, Andrew.
Yay. How's it going, guys? Let me just say, I love the show. I listen every day, and I listen on the podcast to catch up what I don't miss.
Right.
I love you guys so much.
Thank you. But
that's the What's Good. Death to it.
Really? So you're calling on the feature What's Good to tell us death to what's good?
Who likes it anymore? I feel like Kevin's the only one that likes it, which should really say something.
Okay, now let's be honest here. We took 3 calls in this segment. Mm-hmm. One of them was about the Dodgers, which our listeners, including us, are very passionate about. The other one was Allie had questions about her butt, which I thought was very informative.
Right.
And now your call talking about what's good. Now, is this segment a waste of time, or does this one pass muster for you, Andrew?
This one is the exception to the rule.
Oh, I see. This one's the exception.
That's nice. Thank you, Andrew, for saving the feature.
What's good?
Well, 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show. It is 8:53.
Hey, another quick reminder, when you hear a little piece of the Halloween... What's happening here?
Mouth's having a meltdown.
I'm trying to give away something here. When you hear a little piece of the Kevin and Bean Halloween classic, Two Eyeballs, be caller 20 or 21 or 22 or 23, and win some tickets for Knott's Berry Farm Front of the Line Passes. We could be playing it at any time here on K-Rock. That is coming up sometime before the end of the show. And Ralph, your personal Lord and Savior, your hero, your comedy legend hero, John Cleese, joins us next hour as well.
There's nobody better.
There's nobody better.
Fawlty Towers, Monty Python, the list goes on and on and on. Fish Called Wanda.
Right?
Q.
Right? Legend.
Just the best.
Why is he coming on our show?
Son of a bitch.
I don't know. We got to talk about
idea.
Him. We've got to talk about him.
I'm going to intercept him before we get on the air and say,
no.
Mr. Cleese, you've made a tragic mistake. Please turn back now while you still can.
I feel like that's the right move.
I do, too. I would support that if you decided to do that.
What would you do with Monty Python behind a sheet? You ever put it on the sheet? When you go to another city, do you need your things? Do you go back and get things? Or do you just stay in the city?
You should go back and pack things up and bring them.
Anyway, so big 9 o'clock hour straight ahead. First, though, Ralph's here with the showbiz beat on a Tuesday. What's going on? What's new? What's happening?
Well,
this whole Trump thing. You know, they say there may
be... What Trump thing? What's going on with Donald Trump?
Well, you know, there was a video that came out.
Was this in the news?
Him talking to the horrible Billy Bush.
Yeah.
And it caused some issues for Mr. Trump and his campaign. Well, now people are wondering, well, what could have happened over there on The Apprentice? Maybe during his years doing The Apprentice, maybe he said a few inappropriate things. Here's what I know. Brandi Roderick, former playmate Brandi Roderick, was on a team with Vince Neil from Motley Crue.
Right.
While they were in the boardroom, you got to find this video online. It's amazing. And I remember this episode. Vince Neil's talking about how Brandi Roderick definitely desperately wanted to stay on the team and wanted this job on the team. LaToya Jackson's on the other side, and they're in the boardroom. And Vince Neil says, she dropped to her knees, and she was begging me, pleading me, not to let her... To let her do this job on the team, Mr. Trump. And Trump says to Brandi Roderick, to Vince Neil, she dropped to her knees? Yes, yeah, she literally, oh, that must have been quite a sight, you dropping to your knees, he says to Brandi Roderick. And that made the show. That was on television.
So the stuff everybody's talking about now
is
worse?
The outtakes, the stuff is not available. What do you think's on there?
Yeah.
I got to think murder, right? He's got to, like, there's some...
I'm not positive.
Some satanic ritual slayings on an altar with a goat head. I mean, that's what's got to happen, right?
Well, this was locker room talk.
You know, well, we'll never know, apparently.
Because it's just words, folks. It's just words.
Mark Burnett saying that none of that footage will ever be released for various contractual and legal issues. He does not have the ability or the right to release footage or other material from the show, he says, despite what other people are saying.
Sometimes things leak, and you don't know where they leak from.
I feel like Mark Burnett might be in his pocket and vice versa.
Think Trumpy grabbed him by the...
Yeah, a little bit. By his bushy.
It's possible. How about a hug for Bushy?
Hey, guys, can I just say, in Donald Trump's defense... Mm-hmm. None of us want to be held accountable for things that we said in private conversations for our entire life.
Right, but also none of us are running for president.
True, but I don't think we need to elect saints.
No,
we have to choose from people.
Right.
That's all we got is
but
people.
How good and bad are the people?
Well,
you know what, Bean? Have a conversation with a rape survivor or a woman who has been a victim of sexual assault, and then tell me how irrelevant his behavior is.
I am no fan of Mr. Trump. Will not
well,
vote for him.
Well, then don't dismiss it. Don't dismiss
him.
It as if it's not important.
I'm not doing that.
We're not voting for a saint. We're not voting for a pope. I'm so tired of that excuse. Talk to a woman who has been a victim, and you'd be surprised how many women have been. Mm-hmm. And then tell me whether that's relevant or not to the character of the person that's supposed to be the leader of our country.
Here's all I'm saying is, in the history of television, almost every actor or actress has something that they said privately that they wouldn't want dredged up and made public. That's all I'm saying. It's the only thing I'm saying. It may be an unrealistic standard.
And the fact that he supposedly on these tapes used the N-word quite a bit, that's what they're saying?
That's what they're saying from
Is
the
that
set
gonna
of the...
matter at all to his fan base, his followers? Well,
apparently it's irrelevant to people like Bean. They don't care.
It just won't matter to his followers. That's all I'm saying.
And here's the thing. This isn't going into someone's house. They didn't bug his house.
Yeah,
they didn't
true.
Bug his phone. This isn't a private conversation he had in a car with a friend of his. This is stuff he said on a television set to a group of people with a crew with cameras and recording microphones operational.
He makes a lot of bad decisions. There's no question about that. And he's an awful person. I'm not defending Donald
you
Trump.
You started by
you
saying in defense
voting
of Donald
for
Trump.
Him.
Those words were said when you started what you were saying.
You said in defense of Donald
Look,
Trump.
He's a terrible person.
Donald Trump. I never said that. Nope, never said it. You said in defense
I'm
of Donald Trump.
And I approve this message.
No, wrong, never said it.
My bigger point, though, is I don't think it's fair to hold anybody up to a standard who's done a television show for what they said off air.
Wrong.
That's the only thing I'd say.
Wrong. While cameras are there and microphones are open, you got to be responsible for everything you say in those situations.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do.
I don't believe
These aren't pages out of his diary that someone ripped out.
It's not private time.
Can you imagine his diary? With the best words?
Dear diary, so grab the pee today.
Oh, God.
Out of Tic Tacs. Reminder to self, go buy some at 7-Eleven. Love you, Donald. Signed, Donald.
The good news is this is all going to be over.
It's still another month.
It's still a little bit less than
Come
a month. And then there's all the challenges because the blacks influenced the vote and they cheated the election.
What?
Hillary didn't really win. That was the other thing that Donald Trump was saying this week, is that the blacks are going to somehow steal the election for
the
Hillary.
The blacks?
Yes. That's what he said.
Really?
Ship's about,
yes.
about to quit.
Yeah, mean.
So am I.
What's happening?
I'm just telling you, all we have is just to wait through December.
You
when the
better
Supreme
worry
Court...
about what you say on the air, Bean, not so much what people are saying about you when you're not on the air.
When did you start campaigning for Trump?
Suddenly now you're a racist and a sex offender.
I'm
Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
In one break. I don't know what's happened to you, but you might want to stop.
The last 2 weeks, he has been on fire.
Like, had a stroke.
Yes.
Like, on fire.
Sit down.
Was it yesterday that he told everybody not to vote?
Yeah.
Was that yesterday?
No,
that was the day before.
Last week.
You're in California. You don't need to vote.
What?
Don't vote.
Oh, yeah,
I didn't say you don't need to vote. You said it was irrelevant.
Nope on vote.
You said voting was irrelevant in California.
No.
Right. You did say that.
No.
That was his message.
Did you or did you not say that?
I did not say
it's
that.
It's irrelevant in California.
I said
because
you should
California is going to go Democrat no matter what. That's what you said.
I said you should absolutely vote. There are lots of reasons to vote. But the state of California is going Democrat. So even if you vote for Donald Trump, that vote is not going to help get Donald Trump
elected.
You do
know there's other things on the ballot.
That's why I said there's lots of other reasons to vote down ballot.
Come and kill you.
Just for president. Don't make me say it again.
What about the disabled? Do you want to say anything about the disabled?
I love them. They're not as good as regular people, but I do love them.
Blacks are going to ruin the vote.
Bean sucks! Bean sucks! Bean sucks!
In defense of Donald Trump. Right?
I don't like it.
Just crazy.
Oh, no. Rodney doesn't. You guys.
It's a while you grab the pee.
It's just crazy.
Do that with your star.
I'd like to punch him in the face.
Right?
I know you feel, Bobby. But he doesn't live here. That's his secret.
And
he lives
why.
In other cities. Oh, New Orleans. Oh, Seattle.
All right, let's, move on. Let's wrap this one up.
Says the guy who caused the car wreck.
Let's take a vote.
No! Don't vote in California. It's not worth it. You're wasting your time.
It's irrelevant.
I'm Ralph Garman. I want the Showbiz Beat.
I'm just thinking about, we're all here just in awe of pressing this button and talking to the great John Cleese. We're nervous. He's a legend. He's got no business being on this dumb little show.
Right.
What's it like for John Cleese on hold waiting to talk to us, listening to Nirvana scream at him? I wonder what it's like, Mr. Cleese, as you hear that music. What do you think?
Oh, it was music, wasn't it? I was trying to place it. What it was.
And he is already the funniest person on the show today just by saying hello. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show, sir. How are you today?
How are you? Thank you for having me on your show. Why do you say, what did you call it? A boring little show? What did you call it?
Well, it just seems like you're John Cleese and we're...
Dumb little show.
Yeah, it's a dumb little
show. Dumb little show.
It just is.
It's look.
We're dumb
because here's why. I can answer this question because the kind of comedy that you have been doing for decades, sir, is finely crafted and smart and funny and poignant, and ours is just it's essentially penis jokes, and no one can be proud of that.
Your thoughts, sir.
Good. Well, that's great, because I love silly, and you sound very silly indeed.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about this tour. You and your old friend Eric Idle are going out next week for a few weeks, and you're going to be in Southern California with four big dates. John Cleese and Eric Idle together again at last for the very first time. You're going to be playing in Thousand Oaks. You're going to be playing in the Civic Auditorium in Pasadena, Arlington Theater in Santa Barbara, and the California Center for the Arts in Escondido. Why, at this stage in your career, do you and Eric even make the effort to get up and go out and do a tour like this? It's a lot of work. You certainly don't have to. What's the draw for you, sir?
Well, for a start, we're both alive, you see.
Okay.
And so we've got to do something. And secondly, I love California because it's warm. And thirdly, Eric and I actually have a lot of fun because touring, everyone says how hard work it is. It's not the shows that's hard work. It's the travel.
Right.
If you have to fly from one place to another like you have to in Australia because it's so huge and all the towns are so far apart, it's awful because you get up early in case, you know, there's bad traffic on the way to the airport. Then you sit at the airport and the plane is delayed 45 minutes and you get to the other end and they're worried that you don't get the bags. This is going to be lovely. We've hired a beautiful bus. It's got little, well, not little, it's got little beds on it, big beds on it.
All right.
Go on.
And then I'll sleep the previous night. You get on the bus in the morning, have a cup of coffee, and go to sleep. And on the way there, you can laugh and joke. You can rewrite the show. You can send emails. And it's all very nice. You're looking out of the window at Californian countryside, most of which is beautiful. And it's just a pleasure. And doing the shows is kind of is real fun because at this stage of our career, nobody says, I can't stand John Cleese. Unfunny, old, crotchety, I hate him, let's buy six tickets. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So it means that the whole audience likes what we do. And that means we get a nice reception and we're very relaxed and we're not sitting in the wings with our knees shaking thinking, oh God, are they going to like us or not? Because they wouldn't be there if they didn't.
It's already a supportive crowd. Tell us how each individual show is different.
Well, partly because we have a sort of a rough structure of the show, but we never quite know where it's going to go next. We have some sort of idea. Some of this is because we like improvising, and some is because we're so old we can't remember anything.
Okay. Do you use any other kind of... Do you use video as well?
Oh, yes. Yeah. We're doing all sorts of things. We do photos and slides and videos, and we just mix it up. But the great thing is, you see, Eric is wonderful at songs. He's written some extraordinarily funny songs. I mean, everybody knows, or always look on the bright side,
right.
And the Galaxy song. So there's a lot of music from Eric, which is really funny and naughty, of course, being Eric.
Of course.
And then that balances well against the comedy. And then we do some live sketches, which are not old Python sketches, because we've done them. That was the O2 show.
Right,
so
right.
None of the stuff in the O2 show, I think, is in this show at all. We talk about how we met back in 1963. And how all these years later we're still friends, or at least we pretend to be when we're on stage.
For two men that have been, you know, a part of this thing so long, this comedy game, if you will, when you guys get together and you guys talk about people that you find funny, who are some examples of that?
Well, I don't think comedy's in a great is going through a great stage at the moment. I think there's some extraordinarily good stand-up comics. Like Louis C.J., I mean, he's terrific.
Right.
A great fan of Eddie Izzard. Mm-hmm. I like Ricky Gervais' stuff very much. But I think one of the problems at the moment is, and I'm going to be a bit rude now, but I think it's true, if sad, is that because the only people who really go to cinemas are young men between 17 and 23 or something like that, and let's say they're not very strong on general knowledge.
Right. Yes.
They all seem to have studied general ignorance.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the only thing they really know about is all the topics in Hangover. Mm-hmm. You know, they know all about gambling, sex, drugs, celebrities, sports, and then you're winding down. I wanted to make a film once about 1776 because there's a lot about it that's kind of funny, including the fact that most of the British troops were German.
Oh, my.
That's fun. But somebody said, John, you can't do that because the young people don't know about 70. You can't make jokes about it. The only thing they know is who won. They don't know anything else at all. And when there's a general level of ignorance like that, it does mean that you have to sort of restrict what you can be funny about. And that's, I think, why so many of the stand-ups rather tediously make sexual jokes after sexual jokes because there's not much else the audience seems to understand.
Right, too easy.
And I think that in the world of films, as a result, you don't have the great writers that you used to have. I mean, 20, 30, 40 years ago, you used to have great writers out in Hollywood who'd written some absolutely wonderful stuff for the stage in New York and then come out to California. And now the writing, the structuring of comedy is simply not very good anymore. But there's still an enormous amount of talent, and you're still making, in America, you're making some of the best television shows and series that have ever been made. It's just in this area of comedy, and particularly on television, particularly in films, that's where I think it's really got worse.
I think that's an excellent point. We're talking to John Cleese here on the Kevin DeBean Show on K-Rock. So it sounds like what you're saying, if there were a 21st century Monty Python type show that sprung up out of somewhere right now, it would have a lot of trouble finding a large audience. Fortunately, it could go on the internet and probably reach people that way, but you wouldn't get a big network or studio to put something like that out because it would just be too smart for the room.
No, I think you're right. And it's not just a modern phenomenon. I mean, we made what was recently voted the best English comedy of all time, Life of Brian, which I personally think is better than the Holy Grail. We couldn't get anyone to finance it. You know this. We went around the English studios thinking, you know, English comedy, they weren't interested. Then we came to America, and the American studios would not give us £2 million, which was not a lot of money even then.
Right.
To make the movie. And the movie would never have been made if Eric Idle hadn't given the script to Dear George Harrison. You know this?
Yes, and he backed the film, right.
Yeah, and he backed the film. Otherwise, we would never have got on because the studios wouldn't touch it. So it was the same with Monty Python when we started. Most of the people at the BBC didn't like it. The head of the department thought it was terrible.
Wow.
Most of the heads of the department had a meeting. 7 out of 9 of them didn't like it. So you've always had this problem with the people in charge, that if you do something that's really new, really creative, the suits very seldom recognize it. So if we went, you know, if we were starting from scratch now and trying to get Monty Python off the ground now, I don't know how we'd do it. As you say, we'd probably have to start the internet.
Sure.
We always assume that it's completely different for people who are proven. If you've proven yourself and you've done a movie that's made money, anyone will take on your next one. But that's just not the case, huh?
Well, no. I mean, I remember, you remember Holy Grail was very successful.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because we just started the television series, but 3 years later, when we tried to raise money for Life of Brian, they wouldn't give it to us. And I said, but we've shown we could make a successful movie. And I was told, yes, but it wasn't a huge success.
Oh, man.
Now, I don't know if that was true, but that's what I was told. So you basically, it's more insane and more difficult than it used to be. And my daughter, for example, she's really funny. It's Camilla. If you want to see her act, go to YouTube, please, Camilla. She's really funny. But because the material she does is a little bit risky, but also not all about sex and is quite clever, because of that, she finds it quite difficult to get on television, whereas there are people now who are getting on television because they cast them because they have a lot of people following them on the social media.
Yeah.
Not because they're any good, but because they have a lot of... I mean, this is kind of the end of civilization. This makes Donald Trump look almost normal, you know?
Is that why you like to do stand-up? Is that on stage with Eric Idle, you don't have to have anybody else's opinion on what's funny and what's not funny? You can judge it by yourself.
Exactly, and we've kind of got a license to be naughty, because we've been naughty for 40 years, right. They can't suddenly stop us, you know. And we get a big interaction with the audience, we get incredibly funny questions from the audience. One we got in Florida is a nice middle-aged lady got up, very smartly dressed. She said, Mr. Cleese, can I ask you an important question? We said, of course. She said, did the Queen kill Diana?
And the answer, of course, is yes.
Of course, there's a shock silence, broken only by the fact that I'm unable to speak. I have about 30 seconds to think of an answer. In the end, I said, well, certainly not with her bare hands. You know, but, I mean, when you have this kind of interaction with the audience, it's always fresh and it's always fun.
Well, it sounds like it is going to be a wonderful show. Your chance to see two legends on stage together again at last for the very first time. This is going to be Eric Idle and John Cleese. And as I mentioned before, you can go to CleeseandIdle.com for these shows. There are 4 Southern California dates. So no matter where you are hearing our voice right now, there's no excuse for not checking out one of the shows. All in mid-November, the Thousand Oaks Civic Art Plaza, the Civic Auditorium in Pasadena, the Arlington Theater in Santa Barbara, and the California Center for the Arts in Escondido. CleeseandIdle.com. Go see the show. Mr. Cleese, what an honor to have you on the program today. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. We really enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
You
bet.
Thank you.
Who dares to enter the House of Horrors?
That's the best.
and you can't understand it at all.
The only thing I feel bad about is if you're this listener who said us this song years ago, you peak at age 10. Yeah. Then what? Like, this is the best thing Macau will ever do, right?
Oh, agreed.
Sing it if you don't.
Kevin has no time for Halloween Spooks, which is a song that is produced and fully formed and
professional musicians
and formed singers. And singers. No time. This, he could listen to it all day long.
It's a 10-year-old. It's a cute little 10-year-old that was doing it.
Doesn't make it good. It makes it interesting.
It makes it awesome.
I like it.
Makes it understandable.
Although today I don't want Bean on my side, but most days, thank you, Bean.
It makes it understandable. Like, oh, I can understand why it's bad. You can write it off. But it's not good listening, is what I'm saying.
It's great listening.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
really it's top notch.
It's really not.
There is something about
hard
that,
listen.
That melody, though, is so catchy.
It's really
it's
not.
So catchy.
It's a Casio beat played over and over again, and then someone leaning on some keys. Might be a cat. We don't know, really.
Wow. What a bad attitude you have.
It's just the truth. That's just hitting the key on an organ.
You can't yell at me for this if I don't like Halloween Spooks.
Halloween Spooks.
How long do I let it go?
That's a little two eyeballs. Congratulations
right?
to all of
no,
the...
No, I'm saying not right.
Oh,
wrong.
Not right. Okay, I thought you
were on our side. Congratulations to all of the winners who heard us play in Two Eyeballs and called up to win their tickets for the front-of-the-line passes for Not Scary Farm. We've got them for you every day this week here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Ralph joins us now. Time for our final look at the showbiz beat on a Tuesday morning.
Movie news. Bad Moms. Big hit this summer, Bad Moms. Mm-hmm. Mila Kunis, Kristen Bell, Catherine Hahn. If you like that movie, you're not alone. It was a big, big hit. And so, naturally, there's a sequel ready. Wait for it. Bad Dads.
Oh, I never would have come up with that.
It's an all-male remake of Bad Moms with men in it.
That is ruining my childhood.
Finally. Boom. How do you like it now, ladies?
Well, ruining. It doesn't sound awesome.
And Bad Dads is pretty much all dads, right, ladies? Who's with me? Put down that toilet seat, fellas.
I don't know. Get his week stock out of here. I don't know what any of that means. But
any casting news or just
no
the
casting
show?
News yet, Allie.
Okay.
But those dads, let me tell you a little something.
Bad?
They're going to be bad. So, buckle up.
A lot of locker
room
talk.
You see how white people do?
Right. Buckle up for the bad dads. I bet there'll be a black dad in there and a white dad. And
a gay dad.
A gay dad. Hispanic dads. We're going to have all the dads. It'll be the Benetton of dads.
And will they be good?
They'll be bad, Kevin. You're missing the whole point.
Okay, I didn't get that.
Speaking of bad, more details about the Emoji Movie.
Oh, no.
Oh, you heard me.
Really?
Emoji Movie, Express Yourself is the subtitle.
Nope.
James Corden just been added to the cast.
Oh, James.
This, the plot takes us inside the never-before-seen world of smartphones. About a city called Textopolis.
Why do some people tune out?
Where all the emojis live. Hidden inside your messaging app.
This is an SNL short?
No, this is a feature film, an animated feature film coming to a theater near you.
Smells like donkey ass.
The lead emoji is named Gene.
Stop it.
Gene. And he's got to lead all the other emojis out of Textopolis.
Mm-hmm. Come on!
Save the day.
Hmm.
Lead emoji will be played by T.J. Miller. Oh, this movie has everything. This movie has everything. It's really the perfect film if you just want to lay down in a bathtub and open up a vein.
What was the very, very popular, I think it was a Pixar movie recently, about all the emotions that lived inside a little girl's
Inside
head?
Out.
Inside
that
Out,
That was a great film.
That was good.
It sounds great like film. This is kind of in that vein a little bit, right? Where you have all the little emojis?
You may have misunderstood what I was saying. It's emojis. It's a movie about emojis.
Right.
Who live inside your phone.
Okay.
In Textopolis.
Right. I mean, it
does
it could.
Go ahead. Say it. I'll come over there and I'll you stick this right in your eye. It could be good.
It could. Depending,
might be good.
Depending on who does it. Depending on who does it.
Who would do it that you would say?
That, I don't know. Kevin James.
Who could possibly do it?
Kevin
who
James.
Who could possibly do it that would make it good?
I'm saying if somebody like Ron Howard took it on or somebody that actually knows what they're doing when making movies.
No word on Ron
I'm
Howard
just saying,
being involved in the development
the
of
writing,
the
writing. I don't know.
Emoji movie, Express Yourself.
I don't expect it to be great.
Like if the Veep writers did it.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you, Allie.
You're welcome.
Okay. No word on
they're not, though.
David Mandel being involved in the production of this particular film. The Emoji Movie, Express Yourself. If I see the trailer for this film and Madonna's Express Yourself is played during it.
Oh, I assume that'll happen.
I'm going to burn something down.
You know, we just had a conversation with comedy legend John Cleese where he expressed his frustration with the types of movies that are being made.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the audience that they are appealing to.
Did anybody else realize that he was describing me to a T?
To a T.
Yes.
Every single
thing. He practically named you.
Yeah.
He might as well have just said
those
my
films
name.
Films that Kevin likes to go see, which are just horrible, horrible films.
It really was.
No one likes them because they're awful, and yet Kevin keeps going and giving his hard-earned money to them.
I want a good movie.
Hey, Ralph, did we embarrass you in our talk with Mr. Cleese, or was it okay?
Here's the thing. You couldn't because he is so kind and generous and able to dumb himself down that he was able to just to fit right in and give great interview, regardless of your participation.
Are so you proud of me that when he mentioned 1776, I did not say, don't mention the war? Little Fawlty Towers joke? I was proud of myself for not.
Yeah, but then you just did it now, though. So how can we be proud of you?
We're not on the air. We're not on the air.
We are, though.
The thing is, we are.
Yeah.
Right now?
Uh-huh. The mic's I always assume the microphones are live, really.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Think about that.
Right?
She has tremendous hate in her heart.
That's true.
Very true. And now so do we all.
For herself.
Today's celebrity birthdays. Steve Young, NFL broadcaster. Steve Young is 55 years old today. Actress Joan Cusack turns 54. Lenny James Morgan on The Walking Dead is 51. Luke Perry's 50. Jane Krakowski's 48. Constance Zimmer. Boy, do I love her. She was on Entourage, remember? She was
sure.
On that, she was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. recently. She's on Unreal, that show about the faux bachelor show.
She's good in everything.
What's happening? Yes, you're agreeing with me, Allie?
What's going on with Allie?
You're giving the stamp of approval
so
of my
late.
List of dates?
It is a good list.
Of titles?
It's a good list.
I 46 like ball years old.
That's why she was up so late.
Right?
Emily Deschanel, Bones herself, 40 years old today. Matt Bomer's 39. And Michelle Trachtenberg celebrates her 31st birthday. I've never been happier to say. I am Ralph Garman, and I walk the showbiz beat.
On your drive home today, listen to a commercial-free 5 p.m. hour, a random act of helpfulness from the SoCal Helpful Honda dealers. Tomorrow morning on an all-new Kevin and Bean Show, Beer Mug is going to eat the world's hottest potato chip that is made with the Carolina Reaper.
Yeah!
Pepper.
Now, is this something that Dave heard about and then ordered for the show?
Yeah, remember the video of the girl eating it that we put in the Roundup?
Yeah, yeah,
she was
screaming and crying for a day and a half.
At first, it was funny, and then they really turned south.
She was wailing like she had a red-hot poker stuck someplace.
Which she did, basically.
And now, is Muggs volunteering to do this because he loves hot stuff?
Not
or we're not making him do it?
Not only is he volunteering, he's super like confident. I'm going to rock it. It's not going to be a problem.
No.
Yeah, yeah, he's mouthing off in the other room about how good
it's going to be. Let's Facebook Live that, Ken. Can we?
Yes, we can.
Before the lawyers step in and stop this whole shenanigan.
And we're also going to talk to former governor and full-time crazy person Jesse Ventura about his book, Jesse Ventura's Marijuana Manifesto. That's tomorrow morning on an all-new Kevin and Bean Show.